Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents In the Balance by C. Gockel. Narrated by Barry Krynick. Prologue. The lights of the elevator buzz and flicker above Amy. Steve stands beside her. Steve is as tall as Loki is. Was. And his head nearly brushes the ceiling. The FBI's Chicago headquarters are new, but the building is old. The elevator smells musty, shakes as it moves, and it's hot. Amy is sweltering beneath her thick white down jacket, but the thought of taking it off and hauling it around under her arm is just too exhausting.
"Thanks for coming in," Steve says.
Yawning into her hand, Amy manages a low, in response. Her last day as Steve's receptionist was a few weeks ago. She never thought she'd be back here so soon. Her eyes flutter. She's tired and doesn't know why. Maybe just stress? The elevator draws to a stop, and Amy's stomach lurches. Did she eat something that disagrees with her? Or maybe it is the memory of the pictures released by the Tribune this morning. Shutting her eyes, she tries to will away the image of children huddled together, their tiny bodies suffocated beneath debris. Their school collapsed on them during the earthquake Loki caused, right before he destroyed 3 blocks of Chicago's financial district and froze or incinerated the mayor, a duo's executive director, and half of the city's police department. And even if he had been under the influence of Sira, the world seed, it's still...
Amy?
Says Steve. Swaying slightly on her feet, she opens her eyes. Where the fluorescent light's harsh glow touches Steve's dark skin, his face appears ashen. The doors of the elevator are open to a wide room where a duo agents are setting up desks, cubicles, phones, and computers. Leaning towards her slightly, Steve says,
Are you all right?
He holds out a hand as though he might steady her, but then quickly pulls it away. Shaking her head, Amy steps out. Yes, I... She doesn't finish. The eyes of a black-suited agent are on her. Is he glaring at her? She blinks. The agent's eyes are still pointedly aimed in her direction. She looks away, her stomach churning as Steve leads her down a narrow lane between the cubicles. What did she expect? Even if Loki did save the world, his moments of madness before the end still caused the death of thousands. Loki was her lover, and Amy's guilty by association. She smiles ruefully to herself. Lover, what a joke. Loki didn't love her. As she walks with Steve down the aisle, her eyes dart to the side. She catches more hostile looks and a few looks of pity. Averting her gaze to the window, she sees the wreckage of LaSalle Street. There are grim-faced construction workers out there between the piles of collapsed buildings and the snowdrifts. There are also teams of scientists from all over the world scampering about, looks of awe, wonder, concentration, and joy on their faces. Small Geiger counter-like devices are aglow in their hands, detecting magical energy. As yet, no one really knows what magic energy is. They just know it's real, and seems to be in Chicago to stay. A policeman on the street turns and looks in her direction. She's certain he can't see her behind the glass, but she feels like he's looking at her accusingly. She's heard about what Loki did to the SWAT team that raided his home. There'd been no survivors.
Amy,
Steve says. Lifting her eyes, Amy sees they've reached the edge of the main office space. Steve is standing between 2 men guarding an open door. The guards are wearing black suits and crisp white shirts, just like Steve is. With square jaws and crew cuts, they might be Steve, the slightly shorter 20-year-old Caucasian versions. Steve clears his throat, his brow constricted slightly. Amy straightens and follows the direction he gestures her in. She finds herself in a windowless conference room filled with only a long conference table. As Steve closes the door, she looks around. The walls, floor, ceiling, and even the door are covered with dark wire mesh. Promethean wire. It will seal all magic out of the room. She sways slightly on her feet again.
Are you sure you're all right?
Steve says again. Amy closes her eyes. The policeman's gaze, the photo of the children, the mayor's eyes crusted over by ice fill her mind. Should I feel all right, Steve? Opening her eyes, she finds Steve's expression flat and unreadable. I was... Amy raises her arm toward the door and gestures vaguely. Sleeping with the man who was a mass murderer who... Rubbing her temples, she lets out a long breath. Steve leans back against the conference table.
You didn't know it would come to that.
I'm an idiot. I should have realized...
No,
Steve says, crossing his arms.
You shouldn't have.
Jaw tensing, eyes prickling, Amy gives her boss, former boss, a hard stare. His stare is equally hard.
Amy, Loki was, if not a perfect gentleman to you, always protective of you.
He never hurt you, and in your presence was never violent unless he thought he or you were in danger. You weren't an idiot for trusting him, or being involved with him. He draws a breath. Other people put up with worse and get less. Loki did care about you, and no one could predict their partner would fall under the influence of a mind-controlling world seed that fancied itself the second coming of Joseph Stalin. Amy's vision goes blurry with unshed tears. She'd thought that, maybe, but to hear it from someone else.
That's a good speech, Steve, she says, wiping an eye.
Uncrossing his arms, body visibly relaxing, Steve says,
Good. I've been practicing variations of it for the first time a man breaks my little girl's heart.
Amy almost smiles. You're a good dad, Steve. Tilting his head, Steve says,
Of course, after I give that speech to her, I will hunt the man down and kill him.
Amy does smile at that, and for a moment she almost feels better. But then she remembers what Steve doesn't know. Loki only cared about her because he thought she was part of his higher purpose, which he was convinced was burning Asgard to the ground. Turning towards the table, Steve says,
Sorry to bring you in, but a duo wanted you to identify something for us.
Body tensing again, she shoves her hand into her pockets and jumps as a small squeak pierces the air. Something warm and soft squirms under her left hand. Looking down, her eyes widen in surprise. She has a stowaway. Peering up from her pocket is Mr. Squeakers, the eight-legged spider mouse Loki gave to her. Steve looks toward the air conditioning duct.
Was that a mouse?
Patting Mr. Squeaker's head back into her pocket, Amy says, I didn't hear anything. Steve raises an eyebrow but turns his attention back to the table. A large piece of folded black fabric lies there. Pulling away a fold, Steve reveals a gleaming, slightly curved sword. Amy releases a gasp.
Can you identify it? Steve asks.
It's Lavatane, Amy says.
The name means troublesome twig, but she doesn't say that.
All she adds is, Loki's sword. As she says the words, Loki's memories come rushing in. As a final parting gift, he'd planted his memories in her mind. They don't invade her every waking moment, but when she stumbles upon something relevant, they come to her. She shakes her head. When she tries to think back to the time right before he destroyed Syra, she gets no insights as to why he'd chosen to give them to her. She thinks it was just an impulse. Her jaw goes hard and her eyes prickle.
That's what I told them, Steve says. But our experts identified it as a Japanese katana from the Edo period. They wondered why a deity associated with Norse peoples would have a Japanese sword. It's surging with magical energy, Steve says. Outside of magically sealed rooms, it drives our senses off the charts. The only stronger thing we've seen is Syra.
Almost without thinking, Amy reaches towards Lavatane. Last time she'd seen it, it had pulsated with magical blue light. Inside the magically sealed room, it's just a sword, but the blade gleams brightly. She runs a hand absently over the handle. Suddenly caught in another flashback, she says,
Thor and Loki were in Japan at the beginning of the Tokugawa shogunate, looking for samurai to join the ranks of the Einherjar.
Einherjar?
Humans recruited to serve in Odin or Freya's elite guard. Usually the Valkyries did it, but Odin was desperate. Loki and Thor joined in. A memory comes to her of Thor, disguised by Loki's illusions to look like a short Japanese samurai hitting his head against the top of the frame of a door. She snorts. Thor bumped his head a lot in Japan, and Loki seems to remember each and every time. Amy lifts the sword, and Steve shuffles nervously beside her.
It is very sharp, he says, even without magic.
Pointing the blade carefully towards the opposite wall, Amy rotates the handle in her hands.
It's so light. You're sure it's not magical even here?
Humming reverently, Steve says,
It's the magic of exquisite craftsmanship. A thing of beauty, isn't it? Look at the blade. The surface is as smooth as glass.
Amy smiles.
It's like a lightsaber.
The closest we have on this world, says Steve, his voice hushed.
At that moment, from behind them comes the sound of the door opening. A voice with a Hindi accent says,
Steve, you want some coffee?
Steve turns beside her.
Bodhi, how did you get in? The door was locked and there are guards outside.
Amy turns to see Bodhi give Steve a shrug, unruly black bangs falling over one eye. Always a little embarrassed in Bodhi's presence, she turns quickly away. Loki had wiped Bodhi's memories. When she tries to think about it, to understand why Loki seemed to have some personal vendetta against Bodhi, she gets nothing. Another impulse? In Amy's hands, Lavatane begins to pulse with light. Behind her, Bodhi says,
I didn't see any gods and the door wasn't locked.
Amy lifts the sword towards her eyes. Her reflection stares back at her. But around her reflection, where there should be the room, there is darkness.
"Maybe they went to help with the troll outside?" says Bodhi.
"Troll?" says Steve. Tilting her head, Amy says, "Something is happening to the blade." Instead of tilting its head, her reflection looks behind itself.
"Oh, cool sword,"
says Bodhi, his voice suddenly closer.
"Put it down, Amy,"
says Steve. Amy feels a prickle like static in her hands. "Right," she says, lowering the blade back to the table. She tries to release it, but blue current writhes up her arms. She turns towards Steve.
Miss Lewis," says Bodhi.
"Drop it,"
shouts Steve, his hand reaching for her wrist. And then everything is blackness. Amy is suspended in the nothingness of the in-between with only Lavatane's cold glow. There is no Loki to tether her to life with his warm embrace. She has seconds to live, and she aches for him to be with her in the darkness. Chapter 1. Amy's eyes open to darkness and cold. For a moment, she thinks she's still in the in-between. But as her lungs reflexively inhale, air tinged with the acrid scent of fire rushes into her. Something tickles her throat on the way down, and she coughs out a dark gray cloud. She's alive. This is real, and it's very wrong. One hand tightens instinctively around Lavatane, still pulsing faintly. The other scrapes against sharp pebbles on the ground. Taking a sharp, shallow breath, Amy bursts into another coughing fit, her stomach roiling for a moment. Recovering, she blinks in the darkness, her heart beating wildly in her ears. Seized by sudden panic, she pushes herself up, the small gravelly rocks beneath her biting her palm, Lavatane scraping awkwardly across the ground. Wiping her face, she takes in her surroundings, and her heart nearly stops. The blackened, roofless shell of a building rises up on all sides of her, and she's sitting on a pile of rocks. Beyond the dark walls, the horizon line is lit by yellowish light, but above, the sky is dark and gray. Squinting her eyes, she notices dark particulates wafting in the breeze, and for the first time, she notices there is sound, a gentle whistling of the wind. Has she accidentally stumbled through a world gate somehow? She closes her eyes and wishes for a memory from Loki, and gets nothing. But it's so dark, and she's in one tiny place. Maybe if she looks around. Turning, she looks in a direction that might be south.
A dread so potent she feels as though her limbs are made of lead overcomes her, and her body shivers beneath her heavy down coat.
Just a few buildings away is a faceless statue of Ceres she recognizes instantly. It is from the top of the Chicago Board of Trade building. The statue was designed faceless because the architects thought no building would ever be tall enough for it to be visible. Now it looks to be at most 50 feet above the street, and it is the tallest thing she can see above the ruined walls. Clutching Lavatane, Amy scrambles to her feet and stumbles clumsily over rubble to a gap in the wall. Peering through it, she sees that the whole of the Board of Trade has nearly sunk into the ground. She's suddenly struck by a wave of nausea so strong she bends over and coughs until tears come to her eyes and she almost loses her breakfast. Screwing her eyes shut, she wills her stomach to be calm, her heart to still, and her breathing to even. With a shaky exhale, she lifts her head to the black sky. The weather is colder than she remembers when she came in this morning. Her grip tightens on Lavatane's handle. Did she sleep through the apocalypse? From her pocket, she hears a squeak. Amy swallows and pats the head of her little hitchhiker. This is not good, Mr. Squeakers. She turns around and the light flashes in her eyes. Throwing up her hand as a shield from the beam, she hears a shout.
Hands above your head!
It sounds like Steve, but Steve never yells at her. Amy lifts her hands, Lavatane still tight in her grip.
Steve?
She says. She tries to look in the direction of the light, but sees only a tall, dark shadow silhouetted in a gap in the walls.
Who are you?
Says the voice, shifting to her right and edging closer.
Steve? It's me, Amy, she says.
Amy who?
Shouts the maybe Steve.
Lewis, Amy Lewis.
Liar,
he shouts.
What are you doing with Loki's sword?
You asked me to come into the office to identify it,
Amy says, her voice becoming frantic.
Shut up and put it down.
Shaking, Amy says,
okay.
She slowly lowers it to the ground. It falls to the stones with a clang. The beam of light drops to the ground. With the spotlight out of her eyes, she can see her interrogator for the first time. It is Steve, but he's exchanged his suit for combat gear. His face is framed by stubble. In sharp relief against his nearly black skin is a grimy white surgical patch covering one eye.
A really big gun of some sort is strapped over his shoulder. It's still pointed in her direction. Steve edges toward her slowly, body angled sideways, gun upraised, his one good eye looking at her through the sight.
"Who are you really?"
he says when he's only a few steps away. Sputtering, Amy says,
"It's me, Amy. We were in the conference room together with Bodhi. Bodhi Patel? He brought you coffee, I think, and I was lifting the sword and..."
"Shut up," says Steve, and the gun is suddenly inches from her nose. Steve's lips are curled in a snarl and his one eye is wide. It strikes her that he's breathing hard, almost like he's afraid. Shifting awkwardly, gun still aimed at her, Steve reaches a hand out toward her face. Amy draws back a little with a gasp. Steve does not touch her, ever. For a moment he hesitates, but then he puts his fingers on her cheek. His fingers are cool, verging on cold. He taps her once, twice, and then he brings his hand up to touch her hair. Her own breathing has become as loud as his, and her heartbeat is deafening in her ears. She says.
"Amy?"
he whispers, his voice awestruck, the white of his one eye wide. Tapping her cheek again, he says,
"It's really you?"
Yes,
she says.
"What happened? Where is Bodhi?"
Steve drops the gun to his side. Shaking his head, brows hitching to his hairline, he says,
"Dead, just like you."
"What?"
says Amy, a shudder sweeping through her body.
"I saw you,"
Steve says. Bringing his other hand up, he cradles her face and turns her head to the side to look at her neck.
"The bullet hit your carotid artery. There was nothing we could do, not even Thor,"
he whispers. His lips part, and his eyes stay riveted on Amy's throat as though he can't believe what he's seeing. He looks awestruck, bewildered, and frightened, like he's seeing a ghost. Clasping his wrists, Amy says,
"No, it just missed. You got to me in time. Thor took me to the trauma center."
She's alive, and Steve has to believe it because this is so weird she might actually start to doubt it herself. Hands falling away, Steve stares at her, face blank. And then Amy's thoughts snag on another one of Loki's memories. Loki was a little boy sitting by Frigga, Queen of Asgard, as the Queen spun wool into thread.
"Do the threads tell the future?"
Loki asked. He'd heard the maidens whisper the Queen had the gift.
"There is no future, Loki,"
said Frigga.
"Only possibilities that become more and more likely probabilities, and probabilities that become realities."
The Queen smiled down at him. "Although some people say that with each choice we make, a new thread is spun, and from all our choices, a new universe is born. Our fate is not one single strand of thread, but an infinite spiderweb." Amy groans, even as she feels Loki's childlike wonder at the possibility of infinite versions of himself. So the quantum mechanics' many-worlds interpretation has validity. Spiffy. It would be an appropriate time to cry, but what comes out of her mouth is a joke.
"I think Schrodinger's cat just bit me on the butt."
Steve's eye narrows slightly, and Amy remembers that Steve isn't into the sciencey stuff. She starts to explain.
"The many-worlds interpretation is true. That's when..."
He cuts her off with a curt nod.
"All possible histories and futures are real."
Tilting his head, he says,
"Are you sure you're completely human?"
Taken off guard by the question, she stammers,
"Yes? Why?"
His mouth opens, but no sound comes out. He just looks her up and down, and then, not meeting her eyes, he says,
"Nothing. Just a weird feeling."
Shivering, Amy says,
"Steve, what happened here?"
Lifting his gaze, Steve says,
"Loki has the world seed."
His smile tightens.
"Or the world seed has him. The Nine Realms went to shit."
"Oh,"
says Amy.
"That did not happen where you're from?"
Steve says.
"He saved us,"
Amy whispers, voice catching as she remembers Loki's final moments and begging him not to do it.
"Lucky,"
says Steve. Squatting down, he picks up Loki's sword. It pulses in his hands for a moment so brightly that the blue light makes Steve's own skin look a vivid shade of ultramarine, but his single eye, normally dark brown, goes impossibly black.
"Next to Sera, this is the most powerful magical instrument I've seen."
Amy's body stiffens.
"Steve, you don't have a magic detector on you. How do you know that?"
Standing beside her, Lavitane tight in his grip, he says,
"Just a good guess."
In the distance, Amy hears a roar that sounds suspiciously like a troll. Steve's eyes flick in the direction of the sound. Putting his arm around her shoulders, he says,
"You shouldn't be out here. Besides the trolls, there's the fallout. Limited exposure won't hurt you, but you should get to the tunnels."
Amy's body goes cold.
Fallout?
World went to shit,
Steve says, pushing her towards the gap in the wall.
Right now, I'd really like to know how you came by Loki's sword.
The air ahead of them starts to shimmer, and a silky voice rises through the air.
As would we.
Loki,
Amy says. Beside her, Steve goes rigid. The shimmering stops, and Loki stands before them. His hair is ginger and his face pale, though the dark circles under his eyes give his face a blue cast. His own lavatane is sheathed at his side. He's in full armor, horned helmet included, except for his left arm. In Amy's world, Loki had patched together some awkward magical plating to cover his left arm, almost as though he'd wanted to leave himself vulnerable. And in the end, it hadn't been enough to protect him from a stray bullet. The resulting pain had split Sira from Loki's mind just long enough for him to scheme against her. In this world, a form-fitting magical glow encases his armor and the exposed skin on his arm and face.
It's Amy,
says Steve. His voice is very calm, but Amy feels his hand tightening on her shoulder.
You don't want to hurt her, Loki.
Loki tilts his head and one side of his mouth ticks up.
It's a trick. We don't like it. We will make you pay.
Amy lets out a breath. Stepping around her, Steve raises the sword.
No, Loki.
Loki snarls.
We are not in the mood for games, Stephen.
Seeing shadows writhe at Steve's feet, Amy yells, Steve, look out below! Steve looks down. Gravel and rocks are sliding up from the ground over his feet. Steve takes a step forward with a grunt, sending rocks skidding, but pieces of twisted metal snake up around his legs. Leaning forward, Steve snarls and takes a few more steps before the jumble of debris has crawled its way up to his waist. As the rock and metal continues to climb, Steve gives a cry of rage and hurls Lavatane in Loki's direction. Amy gasps. The point strikes Loki squarely in the forehead. There is a flash of light and Loki growls, but the blade falls harmlessly away.
Nice try. Because you're so brave, maybe I'll let you watch.
Leave her alone!
Steve snarls as the debris coils its way around his arms.
Leave her alone, you...
Another black bar snakes up around Steve's mouth, and his voice becomes muffled and indistinct. Loki turns back to Amy.
Where were we, Ms...
Amy's hands ball into fists at her sides. Maybe it's because she knows that running and fighting aren't options. Or maybe being exposed to magic and violence has altered Amy in some fundamental way, but instead of being frightened, she is just extremely pissed.
You're not my Loki,
she spits out. Stepping forward, Loki tilts his head.
You're right. We don't belong to you.
His eyes narrow.
Agent Hill, is it? Is that some fancy reconstructive surgery they've given you?
I'm Amy,
Amy says, stepping around the statue of rubble that covers Steve. She looks up at him. His single eye meets hers. His eyebrows are high. The muzzle of stone and metal debris covers the bottom of his face. Biting her lip, she gives him a tight nod, and then turns her attention back to Loki, stalking toward her with a snarl on his lips.
You have to know I'm not lying,
Amy says. Loki can sense lies. Loki's head tilts to the side like he has a mosquito in his ear. Amy feels a rush of hope. He's still in there. He has to be.
My Loki didn't do this, she says,
gesturing towards the ruins of the city with a tilt of her head. Loki's head ticks to the side again.
What did your Loki do?
He says, taking another step forward until he is just half a body's length away. Amy takes another step around Steve.
He saved us. All of us. The Nine Realms, she whispers.
Liar! Screams Loki. Loki destroys everything!
And then several things happen at once. Snarling, Loki lunges forward. Amy stumbles backwards, landing on her butt, and a small gray shape goes hurtling from her pocket through the air toward Loki with a furious squeak. Pausing mid-stride, Loki tears Mr. Squeakers away from his jugular.
We're impervious to your fangs, you venomous rat,
he hisses. He squeezes his hand, and Mr. Squeakers lets out a high-pitched cry.
No, you gave him to me,
Amy says. Head ticking to the side, Loki relaxes his grip. He looks at Amy, and then tosses Mr. Squeakers at the pile of rubble around Steve. A tiny wire whips out and wraps around her mouse, but Mr. Squeakers continues to squeak furiously as Loki takes a step forward. Scrambling backwards on her hands, Amy tries to think. Last time it was pain that jolted Loki back into control, but this time around Loki seems to have no vulnerabilities in his armor. Licking her lips, she says,
I know you're in there, Loki. You have to fight it.
Shaking his head, Loki rips the glove from his right hand.
I will strangle you with my bare hands!
With a feral snarl, he lunges down towards her. She tries to kick him, but her feet catch under her, instead propelling her backwards. But not fast enough. Loki's hands wrap around the waist of her jeans. Gritting her teeth, she lifts her head. Loki's lips are frozen in a sneer. One hand shoots to her neck as he pulls her towards him. Closing her eyes, Amy tries to scramble backwards with all her might. Gravel goes skidding, but an instant later both Loki's hands are around her throat. Wrapping her hands around his forearms, Amy gasps for air and tries to wiggle out of his grasp. For a moment he squeezes, hard. Eyes still closed, Amy gags, chokes, kicks, and scrambles. And then his grip relaxes just slightly. Amy opens her eyes, gasping for breath. Mr. Squeakers is still chittering madly.
She can hear pebbles falling as Steve struggles against his bonds.
The troll roars in the distance. She has to reason with Loki. All words die in her throat. Loki is no longer sneering. His eyes are wide and horrified. Releasing her, he falls back onto his haunches and clutches his hands to his head. Rocking back and forth on his heels, he lets out a strangled scream.
If it hurts you so much, get out! Get out! Leave me alone!
He lifts his head and lets out another scream. The anguish in his cry is so palpable, Amy feels her eyes prickle, and a weight settle on her chest like the pain is her own. Dropping his hands, Loki bangs his fists against the ground. Rocking on his heels, voice cracking, he shouts,
Stop! Get out! Stop! Stop everything!
The sound of the wind stops. So does Mr. Squeaker's furious tirade. Amy glances at Steve. His eyes are closed as though he's been caught mid-blink. Even the clouds of black ash wafting in the sky have stilled. In front of her, Loki is bent over so far his head is on the ground. His body and armor no longer have Sira's eerie glow. With a cry, he wrenches his helmet from his head and tosses it aside. It catches in mid-air and stays suspended. Face to the ground, he whispers, Amy? She hesitates only a moment before scooting closer to him. Lifting his head, Loki meets her eyes for an instant. His ginger hair is soaked with sweat and flattened against his skull. Averting his eyes quickly, he whispers,
I hurt. Make it stop.
Where? Says Amy. A bitter smile touches the side of his mouth. Loki chuckles, the pitch too high, bordering on hysterical.
Here, he says, touching his chest. Oh, I destroy everything beautiful, he whispers. I kill Nari, Vali, and Sigyn. Everything hurts.
Clutching his head again, he looks down. The real loves of his life. Amy releases a breath. Looking up, he says,
And almost the two of you.
He lifts a hand to her cheek but pulls away at the last moment as though he is afraid to touch her. Through the grime and soot on his face, there are the tracks of tears. He tilts his head.
I didn't know, Amy. I didn't know.
She's never seen Loki cry. Her Loki faced death with a wink and a smirk. Amy brings a hand to his arm, not knowing what to say. When he doesn't react, she edges closer, drops her head to his shoulder, and wraps her arms around him. Closing her eyes, she squeezes him tight. She swears she can feel his heart beating beneath his armor. But maybe it is her own. His body jerks away from her. Taking a long breath, Loki lets loose a whine and begins to rock back and forth again on his heels.
Sira's coming back. How do I make her go away? How did I defeat her?
With a big bang, says Amy, laying a hand on his shoulder. The moment has become surreal. Maybe this is all a weird dream? Taking a breath, she says,
You took her into the in-between and...
That might work,
Loki says, his eyes darting side to side as though waiting for something to lunge at them from out of the gloom.
You killed yourself in the process, Amy says. Maybe this time...
Loki grabs her arm.
I have to get you both out of here,
he says.
I came through the in-between.
Eyes widening, Amy says,
Maybe you can just drop Sira off in the in-between and come with me back to my universe?
She likes the feeling of solidity beneath her hand. And if it is a dream, it doesn't hurt to ask. Loki looks at her, his eyes unfocused. He nods once and then staggers to his feet, pulling her up by her arm.
Must be your sword that made you cross. Not much time.
What about Steve and Mr. Squeakers? Says Amy.
Dropping her arm, Loki spins awkwardly and nearly falls over. Pulling out his own sword, he strikes the metal and stone crawling up Steve's body. The heavy bonds crumble, but Steve remains suspended in mid-air, eyes still closed. Dropping his sword, Loki darts a hand into the rubble and pulls out Mr. Squeakers. The little mouse gives a squeak, and Loki tosses him in Amy's direction. As Amy catches her mouse, Loki glances in Steve's direction.
He'll be all right when time starts again. Better even with me gone.
Amy looks up worriedly, but Loki has his head bent, focused on the sword from her universe.
Not much time, Loki says.
Scrambling to pick up Amy's sword, Loki mutters,
Sword in my universe doesn't cross universes. Has to be something in yours. Has to be.
As he picks up her sword, Loki's body seizes. His eyes go wide and his whole body shudders. With a grunt, he shakes himself. Head ducked down, not meeting Amy's gaze, he catches her around the waist. Pressing Lavitaine into her hands, he whispers into her hair,
I would take care of you.
Loki, she starts to say.
But this is the best I can do, he says.
The air shimmers and they are weightless, suspended in the vacuum of the in-between. The glow of Lavitaine is the only light in the darkness. Amy tries to press herself closer to Loki, but even as she does, he gives her a violent shove that sends her floating off into the darkness. Drifting alone, Lavitaine in her grip, Amy turns her head. Loki is floating away from her in the nothing. The eerie light of Sira is rushing up his arms towards his face. Where Sira's light hasn't touched him, he's completely blue. Eyes on her, he opens his mouth in a silent scream. Only one word crosses his lips, and even Amy can read it.
Go.
She tries to call out to him in the silence, but his eyes have left hers and light is surging through his body. She thinks she sees him smile. She gives a silent cry of despair. There has to be a universe where Loki doesn't have to die. Gravity catches her and she falls, her scream of no ringing in her ears. Chapter 2. Amy lands with a loud thunk of metal. Something gives slightly beneath her backside, her head falls backwards, there is a crack of plastic and dull pain where her head connected with whatever. Jumping beans are having a fiesta in her tummy again, and Amy has to work to keep from retching. Screwing her eyes shut and taking a deep breath, she concentrates and wills away the nausea. She notes the air smells like exhaust and wet snow, and she hears the sounds of traffic. Her eyes bolt open. She's facing the back end of an alley. It takes a moment, but she recognizes it. It's the alley outside the new headquarters. She laughs aloud, for a moment the horror of the last few minutes vanishing. She made it back. With a heavy breath of relief, she looks down. She's landed on top of a minivan. Checking behind her, she sees she shattered a light on the minivan's roof. It's a minivan cab. The front door of the cab opens, and a familiar face emerges. Miss? Says Bodhi, a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. Hadn't Steve said he'd quit smoking? His gaze falls to something in her hand. His skin, normally a shade of warm caramel, goes sallow, and he jumps out and takes a few steps back. She follows his gaze to Lavitaine, pulsing faintly in her hand. Oh, she says, don't worry, we'll just take it back to Steve and—
Are you a Valkyrie? He says.
Pardon? Says Amy. Holding up his hands, Bodhi backs a little further away.
Because, you know, there really is no reason a Valkyrie would want to have anything to do with me.
Amy's brow furrows. Didn't Steve tell her that Bodhi had an odd sense of humor sometimes? Nose wrinkling in disapproval, she shakes her head.
This is no time to joke. I just traveled to another universe and back and watched Loki die all over again and—
Loki?
He squeaks.
And it sucked,
Amy says, breath rushing out of her. Bodhi just stares at her, his eyes wide under shaggy black bangs. He looks like a confused puppy. Amy feels her chest constrict.
Oh, no. Do you know me?
She asks tentatively. Bodhi shakes his head. She touches her chest.
Amy Lewis, does the name ring any bells? I was...
She takes a deep breath, fighting back a wave of panic.
Loki's friend.
Loki?
Bodhi says, taking a step back.
Yes,
says Amy, looking down at her clothes. She's covered in ash.
I know you don't have reason to think fondly of him.
Says Bodhi.
But to me he was...
Says Bodhi. A voice with an audible smirk sounds from behind her.
To you I was what?
Amy turns her head. Standing in the alley near the street is Loki. He is wearing a gray suit with a pink shirt, no tie, and a long wool coat. His hair is ginger and he's sporting a tidier haircut than Amy's ever seen on him. Her eyes widen. Beyond him, the buildings are whole, and the sidewalk is crowded with people passing by in business attire.
Sira,
the battle on LaSalle Street, that hasn't happened. She's not home. In a daze, she slides off the cab's roof.
"You're alive," Amy says.
Even if part of her mind is screaming, warning her that this is not right, she is not home, after watching Loki die not once but twice, it feels like a miracle, a reprieve, just to see him again. Raising an eyebrow, he puts a cell phone to his ear and speaks in Asgardian.
"Yes, Skadi, I found the source of the disturbance."
His eyes fall to Lavatane.
"I think I'll question her myself."
Beside her, Bodhi whispers,
"Hop in the cab, there's still time to..."
Amy begins walking towards Loki. At first slowly, but with every step her feet gain speed, and suddenly she is running towards him, ready to wrap her arms around him as soon as their bodies collide. She reaches him, but their bodies don't collide. Instead, she passes right through one of his illusions. Drawing to a halt, she looks frantically from side to side. Immediately behind her, Loki says,
"Were you really just trying to charge me with a sword?"
Gasping, she looks down. She's still holding Lavatane. Blushing and turning in the direction of Loki's voice, she turns the blade so the handle is up. Loki glares at her, cell phone clutched to his ear. From his phone, she hears a feminine voice speaking Asgardian.
"Are you sure you can handle this?"
Wincing, Amy holds the handle towards Loki. "Here," she says. "I really don't know how to use one of these things." She's vaguely aware of Bodhi slinking back into his cab. Taking the handle, Loki speaks into the phone.
"No, I've got this."
Snapping the phone closed, he looks at the sword and back up at Amy. Bouncing nervously on her heels, Amy says, "It's sort of yours anyway." With a sidelong glance at her, he raises the sword before him. In a reverent whisper, he says, "More than my sword, I think. The only thing I've seen stronger is Sira herself."
"Don't touch Sira!" Amy exclaims. "She'll kill you! I know it! I've seen it twice! Schrodinger's cat, multi-universes, they're real!"
Loki looks to her, both his eyebrows raised.
"I think you and I may have a few things to talk about."
"Yes," says Amy.
Maybe this Loki she can save. He backs toward the wall, sword upraised, and turns his head.
"But first, to deal with that miscreant you were talking to."
Amy follows Loki's gaze down the alley just in time to see Bodhi's cab jolt into reverse and turn backwards around a corner.
"Oh, he's fine. I don't think he knows me in this universe. I don't think he matters," says Amy.
She blinks.
"Not that he doesn't matter. That sounds bad. I mean, I'm not sure."
Scrunching her eyes shut, she says,
"Never mind. Schrodinger's cat caught my tongue."
When she opens her eyes, Loki is staring at her, one eyebrow cocked. He glances quickly at the sky and grabs her wrist. Reeling her in so her back is to his chest, Lavatane's blade uncomfortably close to his nose, he says,
"Time to go."
Her ears pop. There is a rush of air. They are in the in-between for less than a heartbeat, and then they are standing in a rather well-appointed room, both taking deep breaths. Amy's eyes fall on a leather couch with a magazine draped haphazardly over an arm, a freestanding fireplace, and an end table with a glass half full of water. Her face falls a little. It's obviously a living room, but it isn't her Loki's living room with bright floor-to-ceiling windows. The windows in this apartment stretch only from midway up the walls to the ceiling, and they're covered in thick drapes. It is impressive, though. Opulent, even. She's about to pull away from Loki to look around a little more, and then remembers she probably needs to support him. Placing her free hand firmly on his forearm, she prepares for him to stumble and sway. Instead, he stands unwavering, blade upraised before him, staring down at her hands.
"You're not tired by the trip through the in-between?"
Amy says. Loki's gaze moves to her eyes. Blinking, she says, "Normally when you take me through the in-between, it leaves you exhausted." Her eyes go to the blade.
"Oh," she says, "you used Lavatane as a battery."
Loki tilts his head to the side and looks down where he's still clutching her wrist. He meets her gaze again and then withdraws his hand as though she's burned him. She runs a hand nervously through her hair. It's become tangled and... She looks down at her hand. It's coated with grime.
"Ugh, there was fallout in the last universe,"
she says, her voice catching slightly.
"You know me, but I don't know you, miss,"
Loki says.
"Amy,"
says Amy, lifting her eyes. "Amy Lewis."
"And how precisely do you know me, Miss Lewis?"
he says, stepping in front of her and making his body a wall between her and the living space beyond. Reflexively taking a step back, Amy's eyes go unfocused and her stomach lurches.
"I'm going to throw up,"
she says. With a sigh, Loki spins her around by the shoulders and says,
"This way."
Amy pushes away from the counter, her arms shaking. She's just spent the last few minutes dry-heaving into Loki's kitchen sink. Her body is still trembling from the exertion. Way to make an impression. Covering her eyes with her hands, she turns and leans back against the counter. Sorry, she says. I've just traveled through the in-between to two separate universes. The walk through the in-between with you just seemed to be the final straw. Dropping her hands, she sees Loki leaning against the counter, one hand on his chin. At her words, his head jerks as though he's surprised, but he says nothing. Strange, says Amy, looking at her feet, that we stayed in the same universe when you held the sword. She looks up at him. You know I'm not lying, but you probably think I'm crazy. Tilting his head, Loki says, maybe not. And then he shakes himself and goes to a cabinet. Where are my manners? Would you like some water?
Yeah,
she says, suddenly feeling the dryness in her throat and lips. As he pulls out a glass and fills it with water from a tap in the refrigerator, she says,
maybe I should start at the beginning. In my world, we met when Odin tried to execute your sons for political activism.
Loki straightens at her words, the glass of water almost tipping over in his hands. Holding up her hands, Amy says hastily,
I'm sorry, maybe it is uncomfortable to hear. I mean, I hope that they aren't dead in this universe.
Jaw going tight, Loki says, Nari is. The words hit Amy right in the gut. She has a sudden vision that leaves her breathless. Helen dying in Loki's arms. Loki loved his three children. Beyond distinct memories of them, there is a pervasive feeling. It's wilder and stronger than anything she's ever felt for anyone, even Loki. He'd gone to prison for 200 years to protect his sons from banishment and death. She clutches her stomach, suddenly hit by feelings of bitterness, shame, and inadequacy. A slow breath escapes her as a feeling of envy at all of Thor and Odin's half-human children fills her. Loki is nearly infertile. That is something they'd never gotten around to discussing. He associates it with something about his nature, of him being akin to death and destruction. Loki's words in the dark universe ring in her mind. I destroy everything beautiful. Putting a hand to her mouth, she whispers, I'm sorry. Dropping his eyes to the kitchen's stone floor, he says, However, Nari did not die by Odin's hands. Lifting his gaze to hers, he said, Vali is alive, imprisoned, but alive. Only by Odin's grace, the Dyar would have him executed. The Dyar, Odin's council. She swallows.
Oh, you're on maybe good terms with Odin, then?
A smirk twists his lips.
Oh, we have terms.
Ah, says Amy, not knowing how to respond to that. Not so much in my universe.
She stops as he presses the glass into her hand.
Take a sip, he says. Just a small one.
She does. Her stomach doesn't protest, so she drinks a little more. Loki's very close to her, his chest inches away. To distract herself from things that are probably inappropriate, like hugging him, she stares into the water.
Where was I? She mumbles. Odin cast them into the void, and then you followed them, but Nari still had the sheath of Excalibur in his hands, and Vali clung to it, and they didn't die, but they got sucked through a branch of the world tree, and so did you.
She takes a breath.
But it wasn't the same branch, and you wound up on Earth, and they went somewhere. You heard me because I was being attacked by a serial killer, and you rescued me.
She takes another breath.
And then we went to Alfheim to see if we could find where Vali and Nari went to, but actually before that there was a trip to the sheriff's office.
She looks up at him.
I don't know if that part is important or not. How much should I tell you?
Everything would probably be best, says Loki, his face inscrutable.
Right, well...
Her voice stops as he puts a hand on her shoulder.
But first, perhaps you'd like a shower?
Looking up at him, she squeaks,
With you?
His eyes go wide, and then he laughs.
I think I begin to understand the nature of our relationship.
Amy blushes, even as a part of herself warms with the sound of his laughter. As he slips a hand to her back and guides her down a hallway, presumably towards the bathroom, she smiles tightly to herself.
If he understands their relationship, at least one of them does.
A few moments later, Loki guides her into a pitch-black room, and just for a moment, Amy has a sensation of doubt so strong she actually shivers. Evidently sharing the feeling, Mr. Squeakers gives a shaky squeak in her pocket. Then the lights go on, and Amy finds herself in a huge bathroom with a shower behind glass walls and an enormous tub. There are lots of towels and... Her eyes catch on a familiar-looking bathrobe on the back of the door.
Your pocket?
Says Loki, staring intently at her side. Reaching into her coat, Amy pauses as Mr. Squeakers crawls into her hand.
Just Mr. Squeakers,
she says, holding her small 8-legged companion out on her palm. Loki draws back.
One of Hunnir's creatures. They are extremely venomous. A bite from that would be enough to knock even me unconscious.
Amy's brow scrunches as she looks at Mr. Squeakers. His gray fur is a shade darker than normal, and his eight legs, that are usually a glossy, velvety black, are dull and chalky-looking. His back is towards Amy. His nose is lifted in Loki's direction.
Huh,
she says, not really believing him. Turning Mr. Squeakers around on her palm, she lowers her face so he can touch his nose to hers. He likes to do that.
You gave him to me, and he's never bit me or even my dog, Fenrir.
And sometimes Fenrir's affection for Mr. Squeakers involves a sloppy tongue and carrying him around in her mouth. Sure enough, Mr. Squeakers pushes his tiny nose to Amy's. She smiles as his whiskers tickle her cheek.
Curiouser and curiouser, says Loki.
Going to a vanity, he pulls out an unopened toothbrush and some toothpaste, sets them on the counter, and then walks to the door. Pulling it shut behind him, he pauses long enough to give her a wink and a smirk.
I'll leave you to it.
In her hand, Mr. Squeakers gives a squeak. Amy looks down at her mouse. I think he means you, too. We both stink. As bad as she did last time she was trapped in a fire at a duo's old HQ. Her stomach does a nervous little jiggle. Mr. Squeakers gives a squeak that sounds distinctly forlorn, but he doesn't spin a web and leap away. Setting him on top of the vanity, she reaches for the toothbrush. Rinsing off the last vestiges of soap from Mr. Squeaker's fur, Amy holds the mouse in her palm out of the shower's spray. He jumps for the shower head, climbs from the nozzle up the pipe, and then casts a line to the ceiling. A few moments later, he is hanging comfortably upside down at the level of her eyebrows, just out of the spray's reach.
I don't know, Mr. Squeakers, she says, massaging some shampoo into her hair. Maybe we're here for a reason? Maybe this time we can keep him out of trouble?
Mr. Squeakers lets loose a squeak, and Amy snorts.
Okay, maybe we can keep him from getting himself killed.
Keeping Loki out of trouble is probably impossible. Finishing rinsing her hair, she peers through the clear glass walls of the shower. Speaking of, she narrows her eyes. To the room at large, she says, You know, Loki, you can go ahead and make yourself visible. She feels a tickle, low in her gut, and a projection of Loki dressed in suit trousers and the same pink shirt he was wearing earlier walks out of her body and turns to lean against the shower wall, arms crossed over his chest. She feels a warmth flush through her, considerably lower than her gut, that she hasn't felt since, well, before, if she didn't know he was immaterial right now. Shaking her head, she meets his gaze, hoping the shower is hiding her flush. She expects a smirk, but instead his lips are slightly parted, and his eyes are strangely soft. Amy should be embarrassed by her nudity or angry about his spying, but he doesn't feel like a stranger. Even if he isn't her Loki, it's wonderful to see him alive. And actually, the spying is just confirmation that it is him, even if his eyes are gray and his hair is ginger and a little too neat. If his wonderstruck expression is strange, well, it is probably echoing her own. How long were we lovers? He asks. Amy's heart flutters at the word, at the idea that lovers was the conclusion he drew, not a half-dozen other less flattering descriptions for their relationship flitter through her mind. Licking her lips, Amy says, We were... She hesitates. Loki hates to be lied to. As much as she wants to claim the title he's given her, she settles on something closer to the truth. Intimate for only 3 days, just towards the end.
Only 3 days?
Loki whispers, and there is no mistaking the awe in his voice.
How is that possible?
Amy tilts her head, unsure of the meaning behind the question.
But we were friends before that, she says. For a few months.
Friends?
He says, head cocking. Shrugging, Amy says, You came over, hung out, watched TV, Star Trek, TED Talks, you know, and we went to dinner. Loki's brow furrows.
We were courting?
Suddenly, Amy is conscious of her nudity. She crosses her arms over her chest. I think you were more fishing for information about the government agency I was working for. Illusionary forehead dipping closer, Loki gives her a smirk.
I can think of faster ways to get information.
Looking away, Amy says, Yes, well...
Only 3 days,
Loki says again, his voice hushed. Nodding, Amy uncrosses her arms and wipes water from her eyes, mostly so she doesn't have to look at him. The awe and the wonder are making her uncomfortable. Where's the leer? The comments on her breasts? Loki clears his throat. She opens her eyes. Smirking, eyes on her chest, he says,
Nice view, by the way.
She grins like an idiot. It's him. Before she can respond, he walks right through her. Again, she feels a tickle low in her belly. She tilts her head. That's odd. Normally, when he does that trick, she can't feel anything. Shutting off the shower, she squeezes the water out of her hair and turns. Standing just outside of the shower is Loki, holding a towel in his hands. Amy releases a breath. Of course, she is a moderately attractive female in his shower. Loki is going to make sure she knows he's available. Opening the shower door, she takes the towel without a word. There's something so intense about his gaze, something beyond lust. She can't quite meet his eyes. Drying herself, she doesn't look at him. She feels like she's on a train hurtling towards the inevitable, but she doesn't want to get off. She has to find a way to go home. She can't stay, but just once more. Stepping out of the shower, she looks up to find Loki is holding his robe out for her. Turning her back to him, she lets him slip it over her arms. When the fabric drops onto her shoulders, he gently spins her back in his direction. As she stares into his chest, just inches away, afraid to meet his eyes, he says, "Are you here for me, or am I here for you?" It's such a strangely serious thing to say. His hands are still on her shoulders. She wants to lean into him. She wants.
"It's good to see you again," she whispers,
for the first time daring to look up. His face is thoughtful.
"It's good to see you at all," he says, his voice thick.
He raises a hand to gently caress the side of her face. Leaning into it, she closes her eyes and feels tears behind her lids.
"Amy,"
he whispers. She opens her eyes and he drops his forehead onto hers. It's not a sexual gesture, but it is as erotic as anything she's ever felt. Wrapping her arms around his back, she pulls her body flush to his. Loki pulls his face away for the moment. There is something unmistakably tender in his expression, a tenderness she is sure she never saw from her own Loki, and that is the only thing about the moment that makes it feel unreal. But she wants it to be real, desperately. A moment later, his lips are on hers, and that feels very real. Chapter 3. Amy is lying on Loki's couch, clutching a burgundy throw blanket to her chin. They never even made it to the bedroom. Her body feels deliciously warm and languid. Some things about Loki don't change in any universe. She feels her lips pull into a Cheshire Cat grin, and then for the second time in the past 5 minutes, her tummy gives a rumble. Loudly. She scowls down at herself, her cheeks flaming. From behind the couch comes Loki's voice.
"Here you go, madam."
He's bowing down with a smirk, a glass of water and a plate of toast in his hands. She lifts an eyebrow at his impression of a waiter, and runs her eyes from his head to just where the couch interrupts her view. A naked waiter. His smirk widens. Sitting up, she grins back as she takes the plate and glass from his hands. The toast is completely dry, and it smells like heaven. It was Loki's suggestion after her first tummy rumble. Licking her lips, she sets the plate on her lap and begins to tuck in. "I don't know why my stomach is still a little upset," she says as she swallows the first bite. Lips quirked, Loki settles under the throw at the other end of the couch.
"Really?"
he says. Covering her mouth, Amy says, "Maybe I ate something off, or if it's just all the popping around." Her stomach flip-flops at the memory, and she takes another bite to settle it. Loki's brows rise.
"Maybe,"
is all he says. Amy shakes her head, licks her lips again, and takes another bite. "This toast is amazingly good," she says. "It's so flavorful." Has this other universe found a magical way to make amazing toast? Slinking a hand under the throat to tickle her toes, Loki just gives her a bemused look. As she jerks away with a feigned scowl, his brow constricts slightly.
"Amy, what is fallout?"
Taking a sip of water, Amy says, "Radiation from a human-made source. Bomb, nuclear reactor, that sort of thing." Looking towards a window, she tries to find the word in Jotun or Asgardian, but draws a blank. Turning her head back to Loki, she says, "I guess the concept doesn't translate because..." She stops. Eyes wide, mouth hanging open, Loki is giving her a look of utter horror.
"Radiation? Little bits of atoms flying about? Isn't that deadly to humans?"
Amy's lips twitch. "Well, it's all a matter of dosage, really."
"Do you know the dose you were receiving in your world?"
he says, sitting up straight, leaning closer to her, muscles in his chest and arms bunching like he's about to lunge. Amy waves a hand. "No, not my world. It never got so bad in my world. It was the world in between."
"Answer the question!"
Loki shouts. Startled, Amy pulls back into the cushions. "Not really, but..." Loki is already up, running towards the kitchen.
"Are you trying to get you both killed?"
He picks up Lavitaine and dashes down the hall. Amy's brow wrinkles. "Both?" At just that moment, Mr. Squeakers drops from the ceiling on a bungee line of spider silk. Amy looks sideways at the mouse. "I wouldn't try to get you killed," she whispers. Mr. Squeakers doesn't comment. Wrapping herself in the throw, Amy stands up, and the spider mouse drops onto her shoulder. Down the hall where Loki just vanished, there is the sound of air and a whoosh, and then the creak of wood and footsteps. Padding softly forward, Amy peers down the hallway. Like the living room, the decor is opulent-looking but a little antique. There is a thick oriental rug covering parquet floors. The walls are painted a rich brown. A small chandelier is set into a high ceiling with intricate moldings. Despite the luxury, it's dark. And it's very different from the bright, modern open space of Loki's abode in her world. And bigger. There are four doors set into the sides of the hallway, and another door at the very end, a crack of light emerging from it. Loki's voice, muffled and angry, drifts through the hall. And then there is silence. Gripping the throw tighter, Amy walks towards the light. As she reaches up to knock on the slightly ajar door, she hears Loki's voice behind her and to the right. She glances briefly in that direction, and then pushes the door in front of her open anyway. Her breath catches in her throat. It's the bedroom. And it's empty. Those are details that barely register. She can't tear her eyes off the southwestern window facing the financial district. She can't see the Board of Trade for the other buildings in the way. But leaping up into the clouds from the Board of Trade's location is a beam of blue light, as wide as the building itself. Clutching the throw tighter, Amy walks mesmerized towards the window. Loki's voice snaps behind her. Amy?
What happened to the Board of Trade? She says.
You should sit down, says Loki, voice near her ear, hand on her back.
I'm fine, she says curtly. What happened to it?
The building is fine, Loki says. Come, sit down, you may be sick.
I'm not sick, and tell me,
she says, swiveling in his direction, Mr. Squeakers giving a sharp cheep from her shoulder. Loki has his trousers back on and has slung the pink shirt over his shoulders, but it's unbuttoned. He blinks at the mouse and then meets Amy's eyes.
The blue light is the... His jaw tightens. There is no human word for it. Excess energy transformed to light? We are siphoning the magical energy off of Sira and sending it to Asgard.
Amy's jaw drops.
How?
Sit down and I will tell you,
Loki says, his voice stern, almost scolding. Amy narrows her eyes at him but lets herself be led to the bed. When she is seated, Loki sits beside her and takes her hand.
Your people wrapped Sira in a type of magic shielding wire.
We call it Promethean wire, says Amy.
Loki's brows twitch.
But it doesn't fully contain Sira, and she was still growing, sucking anything that touched her into the in-between, threatening to destroy your financial district and opening world gates.
Yes, I know, says Amy. What did you do?
Tilting his head, Loki says,
Odin approached your people and offered to help with the problem.
Offered?
Says Amy. She doesn't remember Odin ever offering to help in her world. In her world, all he did was have his obnoxious raven spies trail Steve. Loki's jaw goes hard.
Offered, he says, meeting her gaze. When Sira draws anything into the in-between, a great deal of magical energy is released. We catch that energy and send it to Asgard, and use a portion for Earth's benefit as well.
Amy's eyes go to the column of light. It is steady and unwavering.
You must be constantly fueling Sira's appetite with something, she says, a sudden sense of foreboding weighing upon her.
Yes, we use your nuclear and chemical waste as fuel, says Loki. For a moment she just sits there, uncomprehending, and then her brain catches up with his words.
That sounds like a good thing for us, she stammers.
Her face heats. She doesn't know what she expected to hear, something vile and evil for some reason.
Thank you, it was my idea.
His lips quirk and a brow rises.
What were you expecting we'd be using?
Amy's saved from having to answer by a knock from down the hall.
Ah, Loki says. That will be the...
He winces.
The closest translation is witch doctor, but I have a feeling the connotations of that might be off.
Witch doctor?
Amy squeaks.
Person who uses magic for healing? Says Loki.
Steve said that short exposure wouldn't be enough to hurt me,
Amy says. Loki's face loses all expression.
Steve? Steve who?
My boss, Steve Rogers, only he wasn't my boss, I guess, because it was another universe, and...
Steve Rogers, the terrorist?
Loki says, voice sharp. Amy stares at him a moment.
Steve?
She flicks a hand.
No, not in this, that, or any other universe.
Lifting an eyebrow, Loki says,
Not according to Odin.
From down the hall, there is a pounding on the door. Amy's nose scrunches.
Steve is too boring to be a terrorist. Worm and troll killing aside, I've caught him humming while filling out paperwork. I think he gets some weird satisfaction from it.
Tapping her chin, she looks away, which might be its own sort of evil.
Loki stares at her a moment and then said, "It must have been a different human." There is another thump at the door. "I must get that," he says. Hopping up from the bed, he jogs from the room. Amy hears the door unlatch, and then a woman's voice, cracking with age, begins speaking in Jotun, the language of frost giants.
"You call me down on this fool errand of yours, and then you make me wait? What you have described is completely impossible."
"I know, but it is true," says Loki, his voice sounding excited.
You know,"
the woman snaps, her voice drawing closer.
"You know nothing about the art of medicine or the science of the body."
Loki laughs.
"I know."
A moment later, a woman with white hair and skin so pale it is nearly translucent enters the room. A scowl is etched on her face. Her eyes are clear but hard and sharp. Though she is bent over, she's still very tall. Amy tilts her head at the signs of aging. Of course, Odin doesn't share the apples of immortality with frost giants.
"Amy, this is Miskun,"
says Loki with a cheery smile.
"She handles these matters for us."
"These matters?" Approaching the bed, Miskun grumbles,
"Far be it from the lovely heir to come to this backwater realm and deal with the half-human whelps left behind after Aesir cavorting."
Clutching the throw tighter to herself, Amy snaps in Jotun, "What did you just say?" Hissing, Miskun straightens as though she's been struck.
"You understand Jotun?" says Loki.
"Yes," says Amy, eyes still on the old woman. Regaining her composure, Miskun sidles up to her.
"I'd say you are clever, but since you are cavorting with Loki, I'll suspend my judgment. Now put your hands down, girl, so I can examine you."
"I wasn't exposed to the atomic particles long enough for it to be an issue," Amy says. She's not really sure, but at this point she'd rather just see a human doctor. A non-judgmental human doctor. Miskun's hands lift in the vicinity of Amy's temples.
"Well, you're right about that."
Amy's eyes shoot to Loki. "Then you can leave." The old woman gives a snort.
"Amy,"
says Loki, voice pleading,
"please let go of the blanket."
Amy meets his eyes. He looks so earnest. Against her better judgment, she lets the blanket fall, clutching her breasts to cover herself. Miskun lays a cold, dry hand on Amy's abdomen and then draws back with a gasp.
"You are right, Loki. She is pregnant."
Amy's body goes rigid and cold. Her eyes go to Loki. Beaming, he bounces down on the bed beside her, puts a hand behind her back, and kisses her forehead. Shaking her head, Miskun clucks.
"But half-humans are never magical, and by the magical signature on this one, I'd say she is at least 4 months along."
She eyes Amy's midriff.
"Though that is obviously impossible."
"She?" says Loki.
"It's a she?"
He sounds positively delighted, and far away, like he's in another room.
"Girl, do you have any idea how far along you are?"
Miskun asks. Amy stares at Miskun blankly. This is impossible. She didn't miss her period. Amy closes her eyes. Or had she? Her heart starts beating very fast, and her hands suddenly feel clammy and cold. Her bleeding had been very light, but she just attributed it to stress. Putting her hands to her temples, she thinks back. How long had it been since her last normal cycle? "About 7 weeks," she whispers.
"The baby's magic is much too strong," Miskun says. "Too much magic matter."
"And she's magically strong?" says Loki, happiness ringing in his voice.
"Did you understand that, Amy? Our child is magical and strong."
But Amy can only focus on the woman in front of her, the sudden shock of discovering she's pregnant giving way to cold fear. "What do you mean the magic matter is too strong? Is it inhibiting other neural development in some way?" Miskun's eyes lift to hers, and for the first time, Amy sees something like respect there.
"Yes. If the magic matter is developing too quickly, the white and gray matter won't have room to develop. It's possible that the magic matter of your child is just especially powerful, but..."
Miskun tilts her head and stares at Amy's midriff and mumbles.
"In fact, I'm certain it's partially that."
"What can you do?" Amy says. Miskun meets her eyes.
"I can try to draw off some of the child's magic. Magic stimulates the development of more magic matter, which..."
"Do it," says Amy.
"Wait," says Loki. "Don't you think we should..."
Miskun's eyes are already closed. A moment later, she opens them, pulls her hands away, and nods up at Amy.
"It is done."
Beside her, Loki stills. Amy pulls the blanket back up until it is underneath her arms,
and then tucks her knees up against her chin. She misses her grandmother. She wants to go home.
Chapter 4. Brushing a stray bang from Amy's face, Loki says,
Maybe my other self wanted you to come here? Maybe he knew and pushed you in the direction of this universe so I could help you.
They're still in his room. Both of them are leaning against the headboard of the bed. The light of the sun outside the window is dimming, and the beam of light above the Board of Trade is shining even brighter in the twilight. Amy has just finished telling him everything. Well, almost everything. She's left out the part about carrying his memories. Maybe Loki only gave them to her on a whim, but they feel more intimate than sex. Telling this Loki would be a betrayal. Of her Loki or herself, she's not sure. Everything else she had to say took hours. He's been very attentive the entire time. There's a cup of tea by the bed with the dregs of a ginger-smelling concoction in it. Miskun gave the herbs to Amy to combat morning sickness. Loki brewed them for her and made more toast. She leans her head on his shoulder. Her eyes are already wet with tears.
But my grandmother, Loki, she'll be worried about me.
Squeezing her hand, he kisses her head.
Amy, I'm not sure I know how to send you home. When I held my other self's Lavitaine in the in-between, we did not hop into another universe.
He shakes his head.
And even if I had a suspicion of how to do it, I don't know if I could get it right. You could wind up in a universe that is much more dangerous than yours or mine. Surely your grandmother, if she knew the circumstances, would rather you go on living here, where you and the baby can be safe.
And the trouble is, that is true. But it doesn't mean Amy's heart doesn't ache. She takes a deep breath.
And the baby,
she says, clutching her midriff. It hasn't quite sunk in yet. Loki grins.
It has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It evidently has sunk in for Loki, and he doesn't have the ambivalence Amy does. She just got her life in order. She was going back to vet school. If she was in her own universe, she would stick with that plan. Have the baby in the summer, go to school in the fall. She and Beatrice would have worked something out. Amy knows it. Here, her whole identity seems to have suddenly winnowed down to Loki's lover, or something, and the mother of his child.
I have to go back to school,
she says.
In this universe or any other.
Her stomach growls.
You need to eat, says Loki.
Amy bites her lip and looks at him. A slight smile on his lips, he catches her chin and his gray eyes meet hers.
Don't worry. I'll take care of you.
It's not the I love you she wanted to hear from the Loki in her own universe. But she wouldn't expect that. He's just met her. Still, the words warm her almost as much. She's had friends who'd gotten pregnant accidentally. Their reception from their boyfriends wasn't as confident, warm, or as loving. She also thinks of the last Earth she visited, blackened by soot and bathed in fallout. Things could be much worse. She squeezes her midriff, and then her stomach grumbles again.
Let's go out and get a bite, says Loki.
Brow furrowing, she says, I need clothes. Wincing, Loki says,
In a fit of anxiety over possible nuclear contamination, I sent all of yours into the in-between.
Amy's mouth falls open.
My wallet!
Her phone. Hopping from the bed, Loki waves a hand.
Don't worry about money. Odin gives me plenty. As for clothes...
He opens a closet and disappears.
I'm sure I've had one guest or another leave a few things that might fit.
He comes out bearing a black dress in a stretchy fabric that actually looks like it might accommodate her curves. Amy just stares at it. It's not that her Loki didn't have partners when she knew him. It's just that he never brought them home. She looks up at this Loki, smiling down at her. He doesn't have to worry about drifting off to sleep and having his partner report him to the FBI. Not only does he not turn blue, which startled women in her own universe into reporting him, he isn't being hunted by the FBI either. Grateful as she is to the latter, she's not sure about the former. She likes him blue. She thinks of Loki being blue when he is more quintessentially himself. He was blue when he destroyed Sira, both times. Of course, he says he doesn't hear Sira talking to him in this universe either. He hasn't broken off into rough monologues in Russian, so she thinks he's telling the truth. She looks down at the dress again. He has other women in his home, in this universe. As if reading her mind, he sits down on the bed beside her and takes her hand. Lifting it to his lips, he says,
Don't worry. This dress is from a passing someone. A dalliance.
Amy looks down at it. But if I'm in the way of... Dalliances, flings, whatever... She's not judging, she's just not sure she has the strength to be one. Her next breath is shallow and short.
Amy, look at me.
She lifts her eyes. His face is deadly serious.
I need to take care of you.
I need to keep you close. He raises an eyebrow and gives her a smirk.
I'm not ready to propose marriage.
I might run screaming through the door if you did, Amy says, startling herself. It was a passing thought that she didn't mean to say out loud. But it is the truth. As much as she loved her Loki, this isn't quite him. Loki chuckles.
We are in agreement, then.
Let's see where things go, shall we?
Amy stares at him. It's not as though she has much of a choice. Still, the way he's smiling, the good humor, his attentiveness, the amazing sex they had earlier. She winces inwardly. What a shallow thought. Biting her lip, she meets his eyes. His lips are quirked. For only having one choice, she sure got a good one. All right, she says, reaching for the dress and pulling it over her head. Excellent, he says. As her head emerges from the fabric, his brows go up.
So you like Star Trek?
Amy blinks at the non sequitur.
Yes,
he grins.
Fantastic. All Thor wants to watch is Survivor reruns.
He holds out his hand to help Amy off the bed. She doesn't need it. She takes it anyway, and even smiles a little. Except for the light from Sira shining like a beacon in Chicago's night sky, her dinner with Loki could have taken place in her own Chicago. They catch a cab, they eat and talk about Star Trek and the intersection of quantum mechanics and magic. The only thing that seems a little off is that Loki doesn't imbibe. When Amy asks about it, Loki just rolls his eyes and says,
Part of a deal I made with Odin. He's noticed I tend to be a bit self-destructive when I drink.
On the one hand, Amy can see the wisdom in that. In her own universe, Amy had known Loki to get fall-down blackout drunk. On the other hand, she'd seen him be funny and insightful while mildly intoxicated. It was while slightly tipsy that Loki had first observed that he wasn't a god of chaos, so much as a figment of the universe's consciousness, grappling with the concept of chaos, trying to understand itself, which was probably as close to the truth as any human or frost giant would get. But this Loki didn't believe Amy when she'd told him that. He thinks, if anything, he might be the cosmic incarnation of lie detection and misdirection, which Amy thinks is a bit of a step down. Still, it is kind of nice that Odin seems to be looking out for him. After dinner, the similarities to her universe break down again. He doesn't take her to her crumbling little garden studio in Little Italy. He takes her to his apartment in a historic building on the Gold Coast with marble floors, gilt edges, and a doorman who wears a uniform with gold trim.
As soon as they enter his apartment door, his hands are on her. Without bothering to turn on the lights, he spins her around and traps her against the wall. His lips are on hers a moment later, and he's hoisting her up. Back still against the wall, dress rucking up, Amy wraps her legs around him and pulls him tighter.
Welcome home,
he mumbles against her lips, and Amy digs her nails into his back. He feels like her Loki. He talks almost like her Loki, and he treats her as well, if not better.
He begins worrying her bottom lip between his teeth, and she sucks in a breath, wondering if they'll make it to the bedroom this time. And then, in the darkness, a muffled, tinny Darth Vader theme starts to play. It takes Amy a moment to realize it's a phone. Loki pulls back with a muttered, Damn, I have to get that. Releasing her legs, Amy slides down as Loki fumbles in his pocket in the dark. Amy hits the lights. Snapping open his phone, he says,
Hey, Big Daddy.
Smirking, he meets her eyes.
It's just Odin. He hates it when I call him that.
Amy's eyes widen. There is the sound of someone talking on the other end of the line, and Loki says in Asgardian,
No, I didn't fulfill the original objective, but I found the source of the anomalous reading.
Yes.
Yes.
No, she's standing right here. Even from where she stands a few feet away, Amy can hear the boom of,
What?
That comes over the line. Winking at her, Loki says,
Relax. She is as gentle as a lamb and wouldn't hurt a fly.
He turns to Amy.
You wouldn't hurt a fly, would you?
Amy's shoulders fall. Actually, the last fly that came into my apartment I caught in a glass and took outside. She fiddles nervously with the fingernail. That had been a bit on the bleeding heart side, even for her. Chuckling, Loki speaks into the phone.
Did you hear that?
And then his face goes serious.
A gate opened up in Wicker Park? And Thor caught a troll?
He tilts his head.
That shouldn't be happening. I can go there right away and...
There is a gruff comment on the other end of the line. Face grave, Loki nods.
Understood.
There is more muffled speech from Odin. Loki smiles at Amy and says,
But I like her. We're having so much fun. She likes Star Trek.
He snickers a little, and although she can't see or hear any response, Amy swears she can feel Odin rolling his single eye. Loki's face becomes somber. A moment later, he sighs.
Very well. I'll write up a report and email it to you before your morning.
There is a pause, and then Loki groans and smacks his forehead.
Yes, I had forgotten that the Svartalfheim morning is only 3 hours from now.
He nods.
You'll still have it. Yes, 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 believe me, I know the conditions of our arrangement.
Amy's jaw drops. Snapping the phone shut, Loki says,
So long, Big Daddy.
Were you just talking to Odin in Svartalfheim on your cell phone?
She gasps. Loki smirks.
Yes. It's a wonder what can be done with magic and human technology together. I'm surprised it took Odin so long to get involved here.
Amy goes completely still.
How involved is Odin?
Loki shrugs.
Oh, he's not one to micromanage. Don't worry. Earth is still under regional control, for the most part.
For the most part?
Says Amy. Loki rolls his eyes and starts walking into the living room, Amy at his heels.
Well, there was the North Korea problem we had to solve, and the situation with Beijing. And Odin is not at all pleased with the Mujahideen's attitude towards us.
He waves a hand and shrugs.
But I try not to get distracted by the details. I hate politics.
His jaw hardens.
If Sigyn hadn't convinced our sons to become involved with politics, Nari would never have been murdered.
Amy straightens.
Sigyn, where is she?
Loki rubs a hand through his hair.
I don't know and I don't care.
He stops and turns, chin tilted, eyes narrowed.
He says, Didn't you just hear me? She got Nari killed.
Amy draws back.
You love Sigyn,
she says, images of Sigyn filling her mind. Sigyn had been Loki's lover and confidant, his caretaker in the cave, mother of Nari and Vali, adoptive mother of Helen. Amy sees Sigyn, eyes flashing, shouting at Loki, sees Loki shouting right back, and feels Loki's admiration for her strength in the memory. She also sees Sigyn, sword upraised, training with the Valkyries after the boys had grown. Loki had been standing at the sidelines, grinning with pride and lust, mulling happily over how her martial skills could be utilized in other pursuits. Amy gasps and looks away.
Maybe in your universe,
Loki says, the bitterness in his voice sharp enough to make the hairs on the back of Amy's neck rise. He steps closer to Amy.
Why are we talking about my ex-wife?
He says, voice suddenly gentle. Putting a hand on either side of her face, he smiles.
I'm just glad you're nothing like her.
Amy looks down, something uncomfortable twisting in her gut. Kissing her forehead, Loki says,
I need to write a report for Odin on your appearance. Would you like to watch TV? Read? Do you need to sleep?
Amy feels exhausted, but it occurs to her television might offer her a window to the universe she's found herself in, so she opts for the TV. Loki sets her up with tea and toast, and then trundles off to type up his report while Amy curls up on the couch and channel surfs. Mr. Squeakers glides down from the ceiling on a line of silk to watch upside down beside her. The local news is all car crashes and the story of firemen rescuing a kitten. The national and international news isn't much more informative. Republicans still want to lower taxes. Democrats still want more money for health care. Nothing is said about North Korea, Mujahideen, or Beijing. The only things really different are the commercials. One for a new casino that's opened up in Indiana makes Amy's eyes bulge. It features a grinning man in Viking gear tossing gold coins into the air. The voiceover proclaims,
You don't have to be an Einherjar to come to Valhalla Casino.
It's obvious that words like Einherjar and Valhalla have entered the common lexicon. But there's nothing sinister about that. As she closes her eyes, just for a moment, she wonders why she keeps expecting something to be sinister here. She's not sure when she wakes up. The channel she is watching is playing reruns from the 1980s. It's still dark outside. Stiff from her position on the couch, Amy decides to relocate to the bedroom. As she turns off the TV and stands up, Mr. Squeakers settles on her shoulder. Blearily making her way down the hallway, she notices a door open to what is presumably the office. Without thinking, she walks in. Loki's back is to her, his eyes focused on two browser windows on his screen. In one is a picture of Amy, her head turned, bruised eyes closed, blood at her temples and leaking from her mouth. In the other side is a mugshot of her would-be killer from her universe, Ed Molson. A strangled sound comes from her mouth, and the screen goes black. Loki is instantly up and out of his seat, coming towards her. A moment later, his arms are around her.
You shouldn't have seen that, little one,
he says, pressing her head to his shoulder. Amy swallows.
I died in this universe, didn't I?
Rubbing her back, Loki whispers.
Yes.
Pressing her eyes to his shoulder, Amy cries,
But how did he get me?
In her universe, Molson almost got her when she was run off the road.
She had been momentarily distracted by a short burst of flame Loki had caused, and she nearly ran into a deer. In this universe, there wouldn't have been a flare, so how... Squeezing her tight, Loki says,
"You encountered him at a gas station just past the Illinois border. You fought him, and he became so enraged, he shot you. The shots drew the attention of some lorry drivers, and he was apprehended, his crimes discovered. He is now in a maximum security prison."
In Loki's arms, Amy quakes.
"Don't worry," Loki whispers. "I will never let that monster hurt you."
Amy sucks in a breath. "What about my grandmother, Beatrice?" Loki sighs and squeezes her tight.
"I'm sorry. She had a stroke soon after your accident. She died instantly."
Nodding into his shoulder, Amy just lets him hold her for a while. When he directs her back to the bedroom, she doesn't protest. She wakes up in the middle of the night, a scream in her throat and a dream of Molson's knee in her back, his gun at her head. Loki is right there beside her, ready to comfort her. It's easy to forget the discomfort she'd felt when he talked about Sigyn. At first light, she wakes up alone. Amy experiences a moment of panic and a bout of nausea she barely restrains. She stares up at the ceiling, a horrific thought overtaking her. She is alone in an unfamiliar universe. She has no identification and no money. She's trapped. A timid squeak sounds from the nightstand. Lifting her head, Amy sees Mr. Squeakers sitting there, a cup of tea and some saltines beside him. There is also a folded piece of paper. Swallowing her unease, Amy gives the spider mouse a quick scratch and then picks up the note. She recognizes Loki's oddly neat script immediately.
"Amy, I have a bit of administrative work to attend to this morning, something I wrangled Odin's approval for. The internets say saltines are the food of choice for women in your condition. Make yourself at home. Loki."
Amy stares at the note for a moment, then folds it back and quickly drinks the tea and gobbles down the saltines. Her nausea abates, but she feels a rising tide of panic take its place. Loki's home is immense, palatial even, but she's beginning to feel claustrophobic. It occurs to her a home is not a home unless you can leave. Still in the dress from the night before, she picks up Mr. Squeakers and goes to stand by the front door. She's suddenly overtaken by the fear that it might be locked. A shaky breath courses out of her lungs as she approaches the doorknob. Swallowing, she takes it in her hand. Closing her eyes, she tries to turn it. It gives without even a click, and she releases a breath. And then she pulls. The door doesn't budge. She yanks the door backwards with all her might, an angry cry on her lips, but it doesn't move. Reaching up, she bangs on the heavy wood with her fists. Of course, nothing happens. No one comes to see what the noise is. Amy slides to her knees and stares up at the doorknob. And then she sees the sliding bolt lock. She bites her lip. Feeling foolish, she smooths her dress and stands up. Narrowing her eyes, still expecting some trick, she gingerly reaches for the bolt. It slides to the side easily. When she tries the door again, it opens without even a squeak. She stares at the dimly lit hallway beyond for a moment. And then, releasing the knob, she lets the door fall closed. A rush of air and a pop of her ears make her turn. Loki is standing in the foyer, Lavatane in his hand. Tilting his head, brow furrowed, he says,
"Amy, what are you doing?"
Her mouth falls open. "How do you say, 'I thought you were holding me prisoner' nicely?" Swallowing, she stammers the least offensive truth she can manage.
"You said you were gone, but the sliding bolt lock was shut, and you can't go out with it locked, so I..."
She takes a breath. "Was confused." "Oh," says Loki. He holds up the sword. For just the briefest moment, Amy thinks the blade is stained and brown and thinks she smells something metallic. Loki's lips purse and Lavatane glows in the dim light of morning, its blade pristine. Still holding up the blade between them, he says in a slightly wonderstruck voice,
"I use Lavatane to walk the in-between. Much more convenient than a cab. As for the sliding bolt lock..."
He winces and lowers the sword.
"It won't keep Thor from knocking the door in, but it will slow him down enough to give you warning."
"Ah," says Amy. Something nags at her. Trying to pry without sounding like she's prying, she said,
"You had an administrative errand?"
From the light, she wouldn't guess it's later than 6 a.m. Fishing in his pocket, he pulls out a small card.
"Here,"
he says with a triumphant grin.
"A gift."
Taking it from him, her brows rise. It's an Illinois driver's license. It has the same photo that used to be on her old license. For a moment that startles her, but then she realizes it still might have been in the system. What must be Loki's address is printed on it beneath her name. And, she pulls the license closer to inspect the words.
"Universal Healthcare ID?"
she says in disbelief. There is a number following the words.
Ah, yes. Some of the newer treatments aren't covered, but it does have maternity.
His face gets serious.
Occasionally, I won't be able to be here, and you might not be able to get hold of Miskun in time. It seemed best to be prepared.
Universal health care? Amy says, still staring at the card. Loki chuckles.
Yes, some sort of single-payer deal Odin helped broker between your squabbling politicians.
She just thought he'd been holding her prisoner, off on some nefarious errand.
Thank you, she says.
Loki waggles his eyebrows and looks pleased as punch. A little overwhelmed, Amy sniffs.
I think I might hug you now.
Smile dropping, Loki takes a step back.
I'm holding a weapon that can cut a tomato and a human in half with equal ease. Let me put it away.
Rolling his shoulders, he sniffs.
Also, I could use a shower.
Turning on his heels, he heads toward the bathroom. Amy looks down in amazement at her ID.
The DMV is open this early in the morning?
Without looking back, Loki laughs.
This is the Aesir's primary outpost on Earth. Odin likes for it to be efficient.
Staring at the card, Amy just shakes her head.
A DMV open before 6 a.m., single-payer health care in the U.S., and nuclear waste removal? She's not sure exactly what Odin's involvement on Earth is, but maybe it's for the best.
Chapter 5. Amy awakes to the slant of afternoon light coming through the blinds and a queasy stomach. There is also a heavy thigh over her hips, pinning her to the bed. Pushing the thigh away, she sits up. Rolling over, she eyes the nightstand. There is a plate of saltines, a cup of Miskun's tea, and Mr. Squeakers sitting there. Squeakers looks forlorn. She thinks he misses Fenrir. The mouse and her dog used to sleep together back home. Willing her stomach to stay still, Amy sits up and pats Mr. Squeakers on the head. He rubs his little ears against her fingers vigorously, and Amy's heart sinks for the little guy. Fenrir used to kiss his ears. She sighs. Amy misses Fenrir, too, but at least she knows Fenrir is safe with Beatrice. Several people have suggested Amy enter Fenrir in the ugliest dog competition. Between Fenrir's looks and aggressive misandry, the little dog is an animal only family could love. Her stomach gives a lurch. Sitting up, she grabs a saltine with one hand and the cup of cold tea with the other. As she nibbles, she looks to the window and the column of blue light in the distance, just visible through the blinds. It's beautiful. Once, Beatrice had told her what every parent wanted was a better life for their children. In this world, humans and Aesir are working together to solve their problems. In the grand scheme, it's marvelous. And in the slightly less grand scheme, Amy's eyes rove around the bedroom. The moldings and fixtures are as ornate as anywhere else in the apartment. There is a master bath more impressive than the guest bathroom off to one side, and a walk-in closet. The bed is king-sized, the duvet is warm and luxurious, the linens smoother than anything she's ever felt beneath her skin. It's so far from what she had when she was growing up. She'd lived in so many places with her mother, sometimes in trailers, but most often in cheap apartment complexes with paper-thin walls. She finishes off her last cracker and idly brings her hand to her barely perceptible bump. Beside her, a lazy hand snakes out from the blankets and begins to make its way up her side.
Feeling better?
Loki says, a smile in his voice, his hand on her, light and teasing. She says, turning to him and raising an eyebrow. He's grinning now, his ginger hair charmingly ruffled, his chin dark with stubble.
You should lie back down again until you feel completely well, he says.
Amy knows where this is going, but she doesn't fight it. The bed is warm. So is he.
So is she.
She slips down into the covers.
Loki shifts beside her, trapping her legs beneath one of his own.
There now. Rest,
he says, laughter in his voice. His fingers are dancing over her skin, assuring that she won't get any rest at all.
He kisses the skin behind her ear and presses against her hip, making her back arch.
Every morning, well, afternoon, is like this. She tries to get out of bed, and he distracts her. He distracts her a lot, even when they're not in bed. It was the same pattern she'd fallen into with him at the end in her own universe. A few days ago, in a haze of post-coital bliss, she'd asked him,
"Is it always like this?" She'd waved a hand vaguely in the air.
All the time, with...
She hadn't finished. He'd laughed and said,
"Sex all the time?"
Nibbling on her ear, he said,
"With a fetching new partner? Of course."
Her brow had furrowed. She'd been going to say, "With you." Amy's other relationships hadn't been like this. Seeing her face fall, Loki had rubbed her stomach and said,
"Don't worry. No matter what happens between us after..."
He'd paused. Amy had felt a tingling low inside her. Amy had noticed he was cautious talking about the baby's future, as though talking about it would jinx it.
I won't abandon either of you, he'd finished, his face very serious. And what more could she ask of a man she'd just met when she was carrying a baby that is his but isn't? She told herself what they had was enough. Moments like this, when he's smiling at her, his fingers skimming nowhere naughty, somehow even more arousing than just making a beeline for the naughty places. Well, it still feels like enough. Eyes slightly hooded, he leans in to put a chaste kiss on her forehead and brings his hand to cover hers where she is cradling her stomach. No matter what she has with Loki, she also has his memories. He isn't lying. He will never abandon her child. He never abandons any of his children. And that means more to her than the luxury around her. Her own father had left when she was very young. Loki gives her hand a squeeze, and then, leaning forward, he places a decidedly not chaste kiss on the side of her neck, just inches below her ear. Amy closes her eyes. Resistance is futile. Still, she musters up the will to tease him. I thought we were going to the Field Museum this afternoon. They haven't been holed up in his apartment the whole time. Miskun had declared light exercise good for Amy, and they go out every day. Today at the field, there is an exhibit of Svartalfheim gems she really wants to see. Huffing a soft laugh, Loki begins trailing kisses from her forehead down the bridge of her nose. We'll have time, he says, and she smiles. From somewhere beyond the bed, Loki's phone starts playing the Darth Vader theme. The trail of kisses down her face abruptly stops. Loki falls back onto the bed with a very unmanly whine. Smirking, Amy rolls over onto her side and traces a hand up his thigh. You going to get that? She says, raising an eyebrow. He never ignores the Darth Vader theme. Loki lifts his head, looks at the trajectory of her hand, looks at the phone, and looks at her hand again. You sweet, terrible, wonderful girl. The Vader theme gets louder. Closing his eyes with another whine, Loki grits his teeth as though summoning all his willpower. Rolling off the bed, he lands on the floor with a thunk. Amy laughs and leans over the edge. Loki snaps the phone open and puts a hand over his eyes. This had better not be about the unicorns in Grant Park. If you can't tell me where the gate is, I can't close it. Amy props her chin on her hand. Odin and Loki's Sira as magical power plant solution is supposed to be taking care of the extra magic world gate sprouting situation that exists in Amy's universe. She picks at the bedspread. Loki's had to close a lot of gates since she's come here, though. His tone is light, unworried, but Amy's concerned. On the floor, Loki snickers. And you know no unicorn will let me close enough to kill it. Loki lifts his hand from his eyes and blows her a kiss. Although the one I have here is sweet enough, I think she might be able to subdue unicorns for us. Not if you're going to kill them, Amy says. See? Says Loki, still smiling, but attention back on the phone. So sweet. Who needs Hunir? Above him, Amy's brow furrows. Loki and Odin don't know where Hunir is in this universe. Loki won't talk much about it. All he'll say is that Hunir tolerated Nari, Vali, and Sigyn's political aspirations, and then changes the subject. Loki scowls. Afghanistan again! Can't it wait? He looks at Amy and grins. I was just getting busy here. Amy can hear the muffled sounds of sharp words on the other end of the line, and then Loki snaps. The oath is to obey you, not to obey unquestioningly. Amy lifts her head from her hand. Obey? Oath? She's known that Loki has been working for Odin, but thought it was because they were on good terms. Her eyes slide to the side at the memory of her first day. What had Loki said? There are terms. There is another bark on the other end of the line, and Loki rubs his eyes. No, no, I'll be at the Bifrost site in 3/4 of an hour. Snapping the phone shut, he sits up without meeting Amy's eyes. I need to put my armor on. You'll be fine for a day without me. Amy blinks. Sure, of course, she says. He's left every time a gate has popped open, but he's seldom gone for more than an hour. Standing up, Loki makes his way to the large walk-in closet in his room, while Amy slips on his robe. She's just cinched it at her waist when there is the sound of banging at the front door. Amy's brow furrows. She just saw Miskun the other day. It isn't time for her next appointment. She takes a tentative step toward the door of the room anyway. From the foyer down the hall there is a crash, and then a bellow from a voice Amy's heard before, but never in this universe.
Loki!
Slipping on a pair of light trousers, Loki curses.
Thor, did you rip my door off the hinges again?
The floorboards outside in the hall groan, and then Thor himself barrels into the room. His eyes slide to Amy, but he doesn't acknowledge her. Amy cowers in the robe, the lack of acknowledgement strangely more unsettling than the times Thor has looked at her in rage. The comforting weight of Mr. Squeakers falls on her shoulder. Training his eyes on Loki, Thor says in Asgardian,
Not ready?
What are you doing back here? Aren't you supposed to be with your father in Svartalfaheim?
Loki barks in English. Slipping a shirt over his shoulders, he mutters, breaking in my door again.
But I love fighting the Mujahideen,
Thor declares, slipping into English too.
Why are you fighting the Mujahideen? Amy asks.
Thor doesn't respond, but Loki smirks and says,
They refuse to accept the constitution Odin has laid out for them. Their government is corrupt. Their holy warriors have launched suicide attacks on the peaceful nations that are friends of Asgard.
Amy tilts her head. Their reasoning doesn't sound horrible, and it sounds believable if it's anything like the Afghanistan on her world. And yet,
they treat their women like shit, Loki says. If I were you, I wouldn't feel sorry for them.
Smiling, Thor says,
But they are the noblest of warriors on the battlefield, and the most challenging, especially since they have their magical armor-piercing bullets.
Magical armor-piercing bullets?
Amy squeaks. Thor doesn't even raise an eyebrow in her direction. For a moment, Amy wonders if Loki's made her invisible. She looks down at her hands. She's still solid, though.
Don't worry, darling,
Loki says, throwing some pieces of armor on the bed and giving her a comforting smile. I'll be fine and back by evening. At his words, Thor's eyebrows shoot up. He looks at Amy and then says in Asgardian,
Darling, back by evening? You've got a human pet now?
Amy scowls.
I'm not a pet!
Thor's jaw drops and Loki snorts, but for a heart-stopping moment, Loki doesn't contradict him. Tilting his head, Thor takes a step forward, a smile on his face.
She has spirit. I like that. Will you share her with me?
Touch her and you'll have my knife through your hand,
Loki shouts. Amy draws back. Her eyes go to Loki. He already has a knife balanced in his fingers. On her shoulder, Mr. Squeakers hisses in Thor's direction. Thor's smile drops. A befuddled look replaces it.
You could have just said no,
he says. Amy blinks at Thor and then at Loki.
Magical armor-piercing bullets?
She says again, her voice trembling a little. Thor snorts.
They and the other rabble have a magical accomplice. He calls himself Prometheus.
Affixing a shin guard, Loki says,
They've fused bullets with the stuff you call Promethean wire.
That's interesting, Amy says. But I'm not asking how, I'm just worried about you.
Loki straightens.
Oh.
He smiles and shrugs.
Don't worry, I'm the incarnation of lie detection and misdirection, remember?
Thor snorts again and rolls his eyes.
Hurry up, get your armor on and kiss her goodbye.
Turning his attention back to his armor, Loki grumbles,
Less haste, more speed.
Voice sounding oddly, almost plaintive, Thor says,
I don't know how you're not excited. I wish Vali could join us. He'd be keen to go.
Loki chuckles.
If Vali were here, he'd join the cause of the Mujahideen.
He winks at Amy.
If my son is the universe's incarnation of anything, it is the spirit of armed rebellion.
Thor sighs.
Vali is a gifted fighter. I miss him.
Snapping a piece of metal over his knee, Loki mutters, Vali without Nari is a psychopath.
Without Nari? Says Amy.
Not looking at her, Loki says, Nari was the peaceful one.
Silly scholar,
mutters Thor. Loki's mouth twists into a grimace.
His books got him tangled in politics, and politics killed him.
Eyes going a little distant, Loki says,
If Nari could declare himself the incarnation of anything, it would be the spirit of democracy.
He shakes his head. Could have. Would have been. Amy suddenly has a memory of Loki and Nari debating the merits of the Magna Carta. Nari, in the memory, because he was impassioned. Loki, just because he liked to shoot ideas to pieces. Attaching another piece of metal to his thigh, Loki mutters,
Hopeless idealists, both of them.
Aye, says Thor. He puts a hand on Loki's shoulder.
But we love them both.
Loki's jaw goes tight, but he doesn't correct the tense. Going to the closet, he straps on a scabbard and slips Lavitane into it. The blade isn't glowing. Amy's head jerks in recognition. It isn't her version of the blade.
Why don't you use the sword from my...
Loki's eyes meet hers. Scowling, he shakes his head. Amy shuts her mouth, her brow furrowing. Thor straightens and looks curiously between the two of them.
So, do you think I should take my Glock and the M16?
Loki asks.
Yes, of course,
says Thor, his look of curiosity turning serious.
Don't be flippant.
Loki smiles and steps back into the closet, returning with a few heavy reinforced suitcases in his hands. Amy had seen them before but hadn't really thought to ask about them. Laying them over the bed, Loki opens them to display wicked-looking firearms and ammo. Amy puts a hand over her mouth and her eyes go wide, but she doesn't say anything. A few minutes later, Loki has a bigger gun over one shoulder. Amy thinks it is the M16, and another smaller pistol-like gun at his side. Thor drags Loki from the room by the shoulder, and Amy follows them towards the door, arms crossed over her chest. Stopping in the kitchen, Loki puts money and a credit card on the counter.
"Go ahead and order food," he says.
Stepping up to Amy, he puts his hand on her stomach and whispers,
"And feel free to go crazy online with the credit card and order new clothes."
Kissing her forehead, he adds,
"Stay here. Be safe."
Amy nods. She doesn't like this, not one bit. But all she says is, "You be safe." Clearing his throat, Thor says,
"Loki, do you think you can lend me your spare Glock? I think I might like one for close combat situations."
Loki grumbles but says to Thor,
"Wait here."
And then he walks back towards the bedroom. Thor's eyes instantly zero in on her. Making a shallow bow, he says,
"Please pardon me, my lady, for my rudeness earlier."
Amy draws back a little. Okay, she says. Straightening, Thor says,
"It is usually not advisable for us to get attached to humans. Still, I'm glad he has finally mustered the courage to be close to someone."
"Why isn't it advisable?"
Amy says, her voice a little harsh. Thor lifts an eyebrow and smiles sadly.
"Because you die so quickly."
Amy suddenly is hit by a flood of Loki's memories. Loki was leaning over Amy while she slept in the huge hotel room they shared in Paris. He raised a blue hand towards her. He wanted to stay, to start over. And then before him, Amy's skin, muscle, and tissues melted away until nothing was left of her but clean white bones. Loki's breath caught in his throat. He blinked and Amy was real and whole. But he knew the message behind the hallucination. Even without his yearly allotment of the immortality-bestowing apples of Eden, Loki was magical. He'd live centuries. He pulled back and away from Amy, trying to rid the image of her sleeping form from his mind. His traitorous mind drifted to the night he spent with her at the bar with her university friends, joking about philosophy and quantum physics, and then to Steve laughing in a snowy alley. Loki wanted to stay on Earth, with Amy, with humanity. Clenching his jaw, he closed his eyes. But there was no future with the short-lived humans he's become fond of. Loki's only future was to see Asgard burn. The memory is so intense, Amy wobbles on her feet, the edges of her vision going black.
"Miss?"
says Thor. From down the hall, Loki screams,
"Amy!"
She hears the sound of running feet, but Thor is faster.
"I have her,"
says Thor, a hand suddenly at her wrist, another around her back. "I'm fine," says Amy. "It was just..." She doesn't finish. She still hasn't told Loki about his memories from another life. She knows she should tell him, that it's just her paranoia holding her back. Or maybe it's insecurity. Maybe he won't believe her or think she's imagining things. Maybe she is imagining things. Maybe she just doesn't want to let go of the idea that her Loki gave her something precious on purpose, even if she doesn't know why.
"Let her go,"
says Loki, wrapping an arm around her. Thor backs away, a smile of joy on his face.
"Loki, she's pregnant."
He turns to Amy.
"Congratulations, Miss..."
It strikes her that she hasn't been introduced to this Thor. "Amy Lewis," she says. Loki is scowling. Thor is grinning like an idiot.
"And the baby is magical. I could feel it just touching her wrist."
"Thor," says Loki,
"hush."
Thor looks at him befuddled. Amy's a little befuddled, too. Loki looks between the two of them.
"I've been going to a great deal of trouble to hide it from Heimdall."
He winces.
"And Odin."
Thor blinks. Amy's brows go up. She hadn't realized they were hiding anything.
"Why?"
says Thor. Loki bites his lip.
"Well, for one, you know it's mine, and you know how these things go for me."
Thor's face softens.
"It will be fine this time, you'll see."
Loki's face tightens all the more.
"And the baby is magical, as you noted." "It's wondrous and strong,"
Thor says.
"I've never heard of a half-human baby."
His smile drops.
"Ah, I see your point. Some people might use the child against you."
Thor drops a heavy hand on Loki's shoulder.
"You have my oath. I shall not speak of it to anyone, even my father. Especially my father."
Loki visibly relaxes.
"Thank you."
Thor lifts his hand and hits Loki on the shoulder again.
"But well done, Loki, well done."
Amy feels her brows knit. She's the one with the morning sickness and the sore breasts, and she'll be lugging the baby around for the next 8 months. Why is Loki getting all the praise? And technically, it wasn't even this Loki. It was her Loki that impregnated her. Her eyes narrow.
But then Thor turns to her and bows again.
And my lady, you have my vow. I will bring Loki home safe to you.
Amy tilts her head. In another life, Thor tried to strangle her, suggested Loki keep her as a servant, and also saved her life. This Thor seems just as blundering and oddly noble.
Thank you, she says.
May I have my goodbye kiss? Says Loki.
He's looking down at her, one eyebrow cocked, a slight lift to one side of his lips. And how can she resist? A few minutes later, she's alone. She stares at the money on the counter for all of 30 seconds, feeling sad that she won't have Loki to herself today. And then she remembers all the things she said she resolved to do when she decided to stay in this universe, going back to veterinary school for one. How did she let herself get so thoroughly distracted by, of all things, sex? She needs to get to work on fixing this right away. She taps her chin. All of her high school, undergrad, and MCAT results probably exist in this universe, and her social security number is still the same, as long as no one Googles her and discovers she's dead. She looks to the office. She can't go back to the school in Oklahoma, obviously, but she could go to the University of Illinois Veterinary School in Chicago. She'll need to fill out the application forms and put her John Hancock on them. But Loki doesn't have a printer. She looks at the money on the counter. This Chicago seems far safer than her Chicago. Surely when Loki said stay here, he didn't mean in the apartment. She taps her chin thoughtfully for all of another 30 seconds, and then bolts to the bedroom to get dressed. Chapter 6. Amy gets out of the cab on LaSalle Street, just a block north of the Chicago Board of Trade. It's not her destination, but it's close enough, and she hasn't been able to see the building up close since she arrived. The building is classic Art Deco, and it's been a dark and foreboding extra in at least one dystopian movie. Now a blue light bathes the old clock at the building's front, old brickwork, moldings, and the faceless statue of Ceres. It's Art Deco as reimagined by Disney. Just above Ceres' head, the light condenses into a single beam the width of the building's highest tower. The beam shoots up into the low-hanging winter clouds. It's beautiful and awe-inspiring. Magic and human engineering fuse together into something better than either. Absently rubbing her almost non-existent bump beneath her coat, Amy whispers, "Baby girl, you are going to have a beautiful world." She smiles, a little bittersweetly. She's given up a lot to stay in this world. She misses Beatrice, Fenrir, and her friends. Lifting her head, she squares her shoulders. There isn't anything she can do about that. She is cared for. She looks down at her new clothes, an impossibly luxurious pink cashmere coat over an ivory silk sweater and tailored trousers. The Mary Jane flats on her feet alone cost an arm and a leg. Although this Loki has as much a fascination with heels as her own, he didn't want her to trip in her condition. Amy is better dressed and better fed now than she's been, well, ever. And she has found herself in a new and interesting world. She will make the most of it. Dropping her eyes, she brings her attention back to Earth. It's a rare 55-degree December day in Chicago. The pavement on the street and the sidewalk is wet with melted snow. Around her, men and women in suits walk past, many without outer coats. Amy has an inexplicable urge to smile and say hello to them. It strikes her that she hasn't really interacted with anyone besides Loki and Miskun since she's been here. Her mood darkens slightly. She sees Miskun twice a week now. Her baby's magic is too strong. Miskun is convinced that without someone to siphon all that magic away, the extra energy will overwhelm the baby's fragile developing body. Squaring her shoulders, Amy wills herself not to think about such things. She does have Miskun, and everything will be fine. Taking a breath, Amy forces her feet into motion and walks southward. In a few minutes, her good cheer is restored. It feels good to be on her own and outside. A little jolt of exhilaration courses down her spine. She's been having a great time with Loki, but she's always been animated by having a purpose and a goal. Now that she's on track to realizing that goal, she feels lighter and stronger at the same time. She is still herself, no matter how everything has changed. LaSalle Street dead ends at the Board of Trade, and Amy turns east there onto Jackson. As she does, she notices the pace of her fellow pedestrians picking up, their conversations stopping, and their eyes fixating straight ahead. It's probably just the end of lunch hour. Nonetheless, Amy finds herself shoving her hands into her pockets and shivering, though it's a mild day for December and her coat is more than adequate to keep her warm. Continuing a few paces down Jackson, she stops in her tracks at what she sees. In her world, there is a courtyard between the Board of Trade and the adjacent building to the east. In her world, there is also a walkway there beneath a bridge of steel and glass that spans the two buildings. Amy was planning on using the walkway as a shortcut to Van Buren.
In this world, the walkway still exists, but the whole courtyard is filled with men in uniforms, reminiscent of human camouflage fatigues, but dark gray. They stand at attention in six long lines of at least 10 men each. All have large guns held in front of their bodies. Amy stares at the soldiers. Loki had told her that the Board of Trade was used as Asgard's embassy on Earth. She expected a few men guarding the doors, but this looks like a small army. She suddenly feels a hand on her elbow and instinctively spins away from it, and finds herself facing a businessman she's never seen before. His blonde hair is tinged with white. He's not particularly tall or short. He has an aquiline nose, a pair of glasses precariously perched at the tip. Behind his glasses, his eyes are wide.
"Miss," he says, "don't stare. You don't want to draw their attention."
From across the street comes a shout and the sound of rapidly approaching footsteps.
"You there, woman, what's your business here?"
Amy turns toward the voices and instinctively takes a step back. Four men in uniform are jogging towards her and the stranger.
"Too late," the stranger says, taking her elbow. "Just keep calm," he whispers.
In her pocket, Mr. Squeaker squeaks, and she wraps her fingers around him, half to keep him there, half to calm herself. As the guards draw to a stop just a few paces away, the man beside her stammers and pushes up his glasses.
"She's just lost."
Slinging his gun behind his back, one of the four uniformed men steps forward.
"What's your name?"
he says to the man.
"Ron Fleischman,"
the stranger says.
"And yours?"
the man says to Amy. She sees Ron tense beside her. Amy gives her name, noticing how people on the street walk by them, carefully not looking. The guard says,
"We'll have to see both of your IDs."
Amy and Ron pull out their wallets and hand over their ID cards. The man looks at them both, pulls out his cell phone, and holds both cards to the phone's screen. The phone beeps cheerfully. Amy hears Ron let out a sigh, and then the uniformed man grunts and says,
"Well, you both check out."
He looks at Amy and adds,
"No loitering here."
Amy nods, never so grateful Loki had gotten her the ID card. Ron grabs her elbow again.
"She won't,"
he says. Spinning Amy around, Ron begins guiding her down the street. Under his breath, he mutters,
"Well, at least they don't make us wear Stars of David."
Amy blinks, and Ron gives a tight smile.
"Humanity's all in this together this time."
Amy's eyes widen.
"Is it that bad?"
Ron releases her arm, his jaw going slack. Then he waves a hand, and in a very good imitation of a famous Jewish faux news anchor and comedian, says,
"I kid, I kid. My people, we whine, we exaggerate."
He puts a hand on his chest and blinks at her. "It's what we do." Amy's eyebrows shoot up, not sure if he's joking about joking or what. Ron gives her a smile that seems a little strained and starts to back away from her. Before he darts away completely, Amy says,
"Wait, can I get to the library if I walk down State Street?"
Face neutral, Ron says,
"Of course."
Pushing up his glasses, he gives her a curt nod and says,
"I have to go."
Turning on his heels, he walks back the way they came, pulling out his phone as he does.
"Thank you,"
Amy calls after him. Ron waves a hand and walks faster. Amy blinks. Shaken by the whole exchange, she resumes walking. She reaches State Street with its familiar throng of shoppers and heads south, her feet moving faster and faster. By the time she reaches Harold Washington Library, she's practically running. Harold Washington Library is the same as Amy remembers it. On the outside, retro-gothic blue-copper owls perch on the corners of the roof. On the inside, warm beige, black, and gold granite stone graces the floors. The high ceilings are flooded with light, and the sound of running water in the fountains fills the lobby. By the time Amy reaches the librarian's desk on the third floor, her heartbeat is almost back to normal. Hadn't Loki told her that the Board of Trade was the most logical place to keep dangerous magical criminals bound up in Ciro's magic? Vali was there, and some dark elven mages. It wasn't just Asgard's city hall located on Earth. It had a multitude of functions, nuclear and chemical waste disposal among them. Odin wouldn't want someone getting their hands on nuclear waste and making a dirty bomb. She wouldn't want that either. And maybe Ron's comments were just hyperbole, tinged with frustration of, well, she doesn't really know, and that is the problem. Handing her ID to the librarian at the desk, Amy says,
"I'd like access to a computer with internet and a printer."
Looking a little embarrassed, the librarian takes out a paper ledger and asks,
"May I ask what you will be using the internet for?"
For a moment, Amy can't speak. They never asked that in her world. Giving a tight smile, Amy says,
"To research veterinary schools and print out applications."
The librarian's frame visibly relaxes. She takes a note of Amy's name, the date and time, and purpose for using the internet, then leads her to the computers. As soon as the librarian is gone, Amy navigates to the late-night faux news show's website. As the screen comes up, she breathes a sigh of relief. The show still exists, and no alarm bells are blaring in the library, alerting anyone to the fact that she isn't searching for veterinary schools. She peeks past the edge of the monitor. The librarian is bent over at her desk. Exhaling, Amy looks back at the screen, and some of her relief dissipates. The show is still running, but the comedian Ron had imitated is no longer the anchor. Opening another tab, Amy Googles the comedian's name. She gets an obituary. Amy sits back in her chair. Something soft brushes against her neck. Reaching up, she pulls the warm, comforting form of Mr. Squeakers into her hand. She starts to absently stroke his fur when she remembers she's in public with a spider mouse. She turns her head. A few seats away, an African-American man with long dreadlocks and caramel skin, obscured by a patchy beard, is staring at her, his eyes wide. Licking her lips, Amy says, The words die on her tongue. It's a good wig, and he'd pass if she didn't recognize him.
Bodie,
she hisses. Without a word, Bodie pushes back his chair and jumps from his seat, walking quickly towards the book stacks. Jumping from her seat, Amy follows him. Bodie takes a look back at her and walks faster. He's heading for the fire exit hidden in the stacks, Amy realizes. Clutching Mr. Squeakers in her hand, she breaks into a run. Bodie must hear her footsteps because he bolts into a sprint and darts down a row of stacks. Amy curses under her breath. She'll never outrun him. She has to outthink him. Gritting her teeth, she darts down the row of stacks parallel to his. As soon as she's in the canyon of books, she slows and crouches down. Mr. Squeakers chooses that moment to slip between her fingers and leap into one of the bookshelves. Amy stifles another curse, but keeps moving down the aisle. She hears what sounds like a squeaky wheel, but can't see the source. And then from down the aisle Bodie took, she hears the thud of books hitting carpeting and an angry woman's voice.
No running in the library!
Yes, ma'am. Excuse me, ma'am, she hears Bodie saying. Amy darts down the stacks as quickly as she can. Up ahead, there is a break in the shelves where another aisle cuts perpendicularly between the stacks. Amy hears what sounds like the squeak of wheels, and then just the very front of an enormous book cart appears in the intersection of the aisles. Amy peers through the books and sees Bodie trapped by the cart and the librarian in the next aisle over. He's looking back the way he came, probably wondering where Amy went. Biting her lip, Amy crouches down and slips as quietly as she can down the aisle until her nose is just a few handbreadths from the cart. The librarian and Bodie don't seem to know she's there.
Are you looking for something?
The librarian says to Bodie.
No, says Bodie, his voice a little winded.
The librarian tisks, and the cart starts to roll down the middle aisle. Straightening, Amy puts her back as close to the shelf as she can. Nose in a book, the librarian doesn't see Amy as she trundles the cart through the central aisle. Turning her head, Amy sees Bodie look cautiously in either direction and then begin to retrace his steps. Amy slinks around the shelf until she's in his aisle. His back is still to her. Holding her breath, Amy steps forward. Her coat swings against her side with a light swoosh. It's enough. Bodie turns towards her sharply, a knife out and open in his hand. Amy gasps. From behind Bodie comes a hiss. He turns his head and immediately holds up his hands.
Is that yours?
He says, eyes wide, skin going sallow. Amy follows the direction of his gaze. Mr. Squeakers is dangling from a line of silk, cutting off Bodie's retreat.
Yes, says Amy, closing in cautiously.
Mr. Squeakers gives another hiss. Letting the knife slide to the floor, Bodie says to the spider mouse,
I was just going to scare her with it.
Mr. Squeakers gives a warning hiss, tiny teeth glinting.
Call him off, please,
Bodie says, voice shaking, eyes still on her mouse. Biting her lip, Amy fists her hands at her side. She needs to be tough.
You know what a spider mouse is. How? She demands.
Bodie's gaze slides to her. The fluorescent lighting dulls his skin, but even in the harsh light, it strikes her that the brown of his eyes is so rich they almost look orange. Now those eyes narrow.
You were supposed to be killed by a serial killer, and then Loki took you away at sword point and you're still alive. How?
He didn't take me away at sword point,
Amy stammers, and then remembers how Lavitaine was so close to her nose at the time.
I mean, I guess it maybe looked like that, but it wasn't...
She tilts her head. Bodie had already left the scene at that point, so how does he know? She shrugs and tries to play cool. We have a relationship. Bodhi's chin drops and his gaze darkens.
You have a relationship with Odin's butcher?
His lip curls up in disgust. Amy's jaw sags.
What? No, he's not...
Seemingly forgetting Mr. Squeaker's Bodhi chuckles. It's not a nice sound. His head does this little bobbing tilt Amy associates with people from India, and he smirks.
Yes, I suppose those political prisoners he killed last week during the prisoner transfer fell on their own swords.
He rolls his eyes.
Oh, wait, they didn't have swords.
He sneers.
Or maybe you didn't care, because Molson just happened to be with them at the time, and he died too.
He takes a step towards Amy, and Mr. Squeakers flies through the air and lands on his shoulder with a hiss.
Squeakers!
Amy says, darting forward and plucking the mouse away just before his little teeth attach to Bodhi's neck. Bodhi leans back against the shelf behind him, hands to his neck, eyes wide. His gaze lingers on the mouse in Amy's hand. Being tough didn't work, so Amy switches tactics.
I am not from this universe. In my universe, things with Loki went very differently. He didn't work for Odin at all, and half of Chicago got destroyed, but it wasn't his fault, and now I'm here and everything looks okay, better than okay, but then I find out my favorite comedian is dead, and you say Loki is Odin's butcher?
Bodhi's gaze slides upwards to hers. Swallowing, he says,
That sounds too crazy to even make up.
Because I didn't, and you're in my universe too, and in the other universe I visited.
Other universe?
Says Bodhi, but Amy doesn't answer him. Better not to say what happens when Loki gets too much power.
Steve was there, she says,
eyes sliding away and then quickly back to Bodhi.
What happened to Steve Rogers here?
Bodhi's already wide eyes widen further at the question, and then he shakes his head.
If you mean the former Aduo agent, he was one of the first people Odin put to death.
Why?
Bodhi shrugs.
Well, our source says Odin mistrusts anyone he hears.
Amy straightens. In her universe, Odin had heard Steve, too, and then sent his raven spies to harass and keep an eye on him. Smirking, Bodhi says,
I think Odin doesn't like competition.
What?
Says Amy, her chest going tight. She shakes her head, and then she says,
And what's going on in Beijing?
All she knows is there was some sort of misunderstanding, in Loki's words. Bodhi stares at her a moment, and then he laughs.
You really are from another universe.
Tell me, I need to know!
Amy says, forcing herself not to shout. Huffing a breath, Bodhi gives a bitter smile and says,
The Chinese were going to neutralize the Asgardian threat here in Chicago with a nuclear strike.
Amy's eyes widen and her mouth gapes. Bodhi shrugs.
According to Odin, anyway.
He chuckles.
But Odin sent their nuke right back to them.
Stumbling backwards, she leans against a shelf and pulls Mr. Squeakers to her, all the breath rushing out of her lungs.
The devastation a nuclear strike would cause in Beijing. It's too immense to conceptualize, to believe.
It takes her a few moments to find her voice.
How?
She stammers. Bodhi shrugs.
Magic. Odin controls Sira, so he controls everything.
Amy looks away. She can't quite believe him. Voice a little hushed, Bodhi says,
Isn't that what he does in your universe?
No,
says Amy, shaking her head. Her eyes are unfocused, her body cold despite her coat. Scratching at his wig, making the dreads jostle, Bodhi looks down.
But our source says Odin has been waiting to intervene since the Industrial Revolution, and Sira just gave him an excuse.
Waiting to intervene?
Says Amy, stepping closer again. Bodhi blinks.
We were getting too close.
Too close to what?
Says Amy. She's inches away from him, and she should step away, but she can't. Even if she doesn't know Bodhi well in her world, at the moment he feels like an island of familiarity in a world that is suddenly strange and wrong. Shrugging, Bodhi says,
Too close to being a threat to Asgard's supremacy.
Amy's brow furrows.
Who is your source?
A beeping from Bodhi's pocket cuts off her question. Amy's eyes widen as he pulls out a magic detector. She hasn't seen one since she was in her world.
I have to go,
he says. Amy nods and pulls Mr. Squeakers to her chest. Bodhi starts to walk past her, and then stops. Licking his lips nervously, he whispers,
Do you want to come with me?
In her own universe, Bodhi has an earnestness and a sweetness about him. Maybe it's just his ridiculously long lashes, but she gets those vibes from him here, too. She wants to say yes. A shout rises in the quiet at the library.
Amy!
It's Loki. She'd left him a note on his counter telling him where she'd gone and what she was doing.
Run!
Amy whispers. Bodhi hesitates for only a moment, and then with a hasty nod, he runs. A shadow at the other end of the aisle catches Amy's eye. She turns to see Loki. He's wearing his armor, and it's stained with mud and other things that look suspiciously like blood.
Who are you talking to?
He says, voice low and threatening.
Mr. Squeakers protests his tone with a little hiss in her hand. Amy says nothing. No matter, says Loki. I see where he's gone. What is evidently just an illusion of Loki walks through Amy, evoking the now familiar tingle low in her belly and a frustrated squeak from her mouse. Amy hears the sound of a wildly beeping magic detector in the direction Loki's double is going, pounding footsteps and a door slam, and then more footsteps. Amy takes off in that direction, passing through Loki's double as she does. She turns down a hallway to see what must be the real Loki opening the doorway to a fire exit. Lavatane, her Lavatane, glowing blue in his hands. An alarm immediately goes off. Jaw-dropping, Loki shouts, "He's gone! He's completely gone!" Amy's body sags, and she breathes out a long sigh of relief. Turning quickly towards her, he says, "I'm still not done with you." The sound of racing footsteps makes Amy turn. Two library security guards come charging down the aisle just as Loki grabs her by the wrist. They look at Amy, and then at Loki, and then they hold up their hands.
"Sir, we're sorry, sir,"
one of them says. Amy feels her skin heat in fury. Trying to yank her wrist away from Loki, she shouts at the guards, "You're not going to do anything?" They pale noticeably, then back away. Squeezing Amy's wrist too tightly, Loki lets out a growl and lifts Lavatane too close to her nose. She sees the Adam's apple of one of the security guards bob as he swallows, and then there is only the cold and darkness of the in-between. Chapter 7. The blanket of cold and black falls away, and Loki releases her wrist. Gasping, Amy trips forward into Loki's living room, Mr. Squeakers still clutched tightly in her hand. Heaving for breath, burning at the way she was manhandled in the library and the way the guards did nothing, Amy spins towards Loki. Before she can say anything, Loki screams, "What do you think you're doing?" His face is red, he's waving one arm, and his knuckles are white around Lavatane's handle. Her eyes fall on the blade, and she remembers Bodhi's words, "Odin's butcher." Her gaze lifts up to Loki's. Fear prickles along her spine, but more than afraid, she's aghast and disgusted. "What are you doing?" she shouts back. "Frightening people? Killing people?" Lips curling in a sneer, Loki takes a step forward. Mr. Squeakers hisses in her hands, and he stops. Amy keeps shouting, "That's what you do for Odin, isn't it? You killed those political prisoners earlier this week." Loki's eyes widen as though he's in some sort of shock. And then he snaps, "For killing Odin's enemies, I got to kill Molson as well. You should be pleased." Amy stares at him. He looks both furious and confused. Her thoughts are collecting into the train of a fragile narrative she's afraid to know and yet has to know. "How many people have you killed?" she whispers. "And how many have died while he stood by and did nothing?" Stepping forward, Loki drops his chin and speaks through clenched teeth. "I am under an oath to Odin." Mr. Squeakers gives a hiss, but Loki doesn't even lay his eyes on the mouse. Amy straightens. She feels numb. Voice soft, almost to herself, she says, "So you're just obeying orders," as though that would make it right.
"I am doing what I must do to save Valley,"
Loki says, free hand fisting at his side. Amy stares at it. That hand touched her with such tenderness. He couldn't be a murderer, could he? She follows the hand with her eyes as he lifts it to rub his face. For a moment, she sees something like shame, but then his face hardens and he says,
"Odin has my oath that as long as he does not harm my children, I will obey him."
Running a hand through his hair, Loki looks down.
"Even that wasn't enough to save Nari."
Amy feels as though her heart has stopped in her chest. Voice quiet, she says, "How many people have you killed, Loki? How many lives were worth the life of one?" Raising his head, he says,
"You're not a parent. You don't understand."
"So you would kill however many children of others that it takes to—"
"I don't kill children!"
Loki screams. Amy stumbles backwards, bumping against the back of the couch and squeezing a hissing Mr. Squeakers. She hadn't meant children in the sense of adolescence. She'd meant it in the larger sense of the word. But the way he interprets it— She feels the breath rush from her lungs. "Because Odin hasn't ordered you to," she whispers. Loki only glares at her, saying nothing. What had Loki said? That his oath was to obey, but not unquestioningly. Her mind spins. Loki can obey, but only up to a point. Odin has to know it. She shakes her head. "That would break you. He'd lose you then. And now he's got you on a tighter leash than he had you on in the cave." Loki grinds his jaw.
"We aren't talking about this," he says.
Swallowing, Amy whispers, "I think we are."
"No!"
shouts Loki, stepping towards her and raising a finger at her chest.
We are talking about the fact that you left when I specifically told you to stay here.
He's so close she can feel his breath on her face and smell the dried blood and other things on his armor. Her stomach rolls, but she doesn't give in to it. Mr. Squeakers gives a ferocious hiss. Loki's eyes go to her hands, and he takes a step back, but his face twists.
Were you at the library to meet up with that fugitive?
Amy stares at him a moment, not connecting his words to the meaning.
Answer me!
Loki shouts, his free hand lifting like he wants to swing at her but won't. Or, Amy gives Mr. Squeakers a little pat behind the ears. Or can't. Understanding comes to her suddenly. Fugitive. He means Bodhi. Shaking in fury and fear, she says,
No, I went to the library to reapply to vet school. I just happened to meet him there.
Dropping his hand, Loki turns and paces a few steps from her. And then he turns back to her.
You shouldn't have done that,
he says. Amy straightens, a weird sort of calm coming over her. She stares at him a moment, trying to take it all in. The man who cares for her, who makes her tea and toast, who wraps her in his arms every night, kills people without conscience? She can't quite believe it. If what Bodhi says is true, Loki would have to see humans as lesser beings. Her eyes squeeze shut. But Loki doesn't think that. Not in her memories. Maybe what Bodhi said about Loki killing political prisoners was a mistake. Maybe Loki just saw the prisoners as more Molsons and deserving of death. That's still wrong, but understandable from his perspective. Maybe there haven't really been others. Besides armed combatants, but that is different, and... Ron's words, at least they don't make us wear stars of David, come to her mind, and she grits her teeth. Voice soothing, Loki steps towards her. You won't do that again, will you? His frame is silhouetted by the light in the foyer. He moves with unconscious grace, like a snake. Amy lets out a careful breath of air.
Which part?
She says, tilting her head and avoiding his gaze. Leaving the house, applying to vet school, or talking to fugitives? Loki's jaw hardens.
Any of it.
The vision Amy had of making a life here with him and the baby shatters in that instant. She squeezes her fist so hard her nails bite into her palm. Even if Bodhi is wrong, even if he lied, her life with this Loki is over. Feeling a slightly hysterical laugh building in her chest, she puts her hand to her mouth. She'd been right all along. This life, this universe, this Loki that adores her, they are all too perfect. Perhaps taking her stifled laugh for a sob, Loki puts an arm around her shoulder, carefully taking the side of her that doesn't hold Mr. Squeaker's.
Haven't I been good to you?
He whispers, his breath caressing her ear. Ordinarily it would make her skin heat, but now it is like the touch of a stranger on the L train. Amy has to struggle to keep from snapping her head away from him. She has to think.
Haven't we had fun?
Loki murmurs. Amy does her best to keep her body from stiffening. Does he actually think she will stay with him? Apparently not catching on to her unease, he says,
Soon you'll have a baby to take care of. That will be more than enough for you. Veterinary school is just a silly dream.
Amy's lips twist into a half-smile. Silly dream? It's the only thing she's wanted to be since finding a bag of kittens at the side of the highway as a child. Her mother had chased her out of their trailer because she had a boyfriend over. The kittens had been similarly inconvenient to their owners. Hungry and dehydrated, as soon as she opened the bag, they'd crawled into her lap and pressed themselves to her, their love and affection instant and uncomplicated. Nursing them back to health had given her confidence and made her feel needed by someone. No matter how bad things got, how many boyfriends her mother went through, some of them were very nice to Amy, which made their departures that much worse, or how much her mother drank, Amy had the thread of her dream to hold on to. She held on to it when she ran away to live with her grandparents during high school, and held on to it late nights when studying for tests, and during the day working dead-end jobs. It's what kept her sane working as a duo's receptionist for half a year. Dreams striven for are not silly. They give you the strength to reconstruct your reality. Her eyes slide to Loki. And in Amy's universe, the skills she'd learned from that dream had allowed her to save her Loki from bleeding to death. Fingers entwined in Amy's hair, gaze meeting hers, this Loki says,
I want to take care of you. I need to take care of you. You're very special to me, but you have to promise to behave.
A bitter taste comes to Amy's mouth. No rush of memories comes to her, but she just knows that Loki never asked Angenboda or Sigyn to behave. She shivers.
I'm not special to you, she says.
She had been special to the Loki in her universe, though, hadn't she? Even if he didn't love her. A flashback grips her, and for a moment she is the Loki in her universe.
One of his doubles is standing above Amy's body, lying on the floor of a duo's old headquarters, green elven fire rising around her. She feels Loki's horror as he watches through the double's eyes from the safety of his apartment, feels his realization that she will die, and hears her own voice in his head. I don't want to die alone. It was a plea, a prayer, and it felt like an anchor pulling Loki down, connecting him to her and to the universe, making him want to do impossible things. Without thinking, he'd step through the in-between to her side, and then step through the void once more with her in his arms. He had no Lavatane charged with Sira's magic to power the trip through the void. They'd both almost died. But this Loki... She meets his eyes. He doesn't hear her in his head. She hasn't saved his life. She hasn't driven him to Alfheim or saved him from being dragged back to Odin when his presence was discovered there. The child I'm carrying is special to you. Not me, she says. Loki smiles and pulls his head back, pantomiming the movements he'd make if she had slapped him. Leaning forward again, he says lightly, That's not true. Amy smiles sadly. God of lies, indeed. Tugging lightly on her hair, Loki kisses her forehead. Promise me you'll be good. Amy's smile drops. Isn't she always the good girl? And wouldn't the definition of good entail finding out what the hell is going on in this universe? I promise to be good, she says. She expects Loki to catch the misdirection, but if he does, he doesn't show it. Hands tight on her head, Loki leans so close his forehead is nearly against hers. Face soft, he whispers, Promise me you'll obey me. Amy stares at him, her hands tightening on Mr. Squeaker's in her pocket. That is a promise she can't make. Softness dropping from his face, Loki tugs her hair sharply. Promise me! Head snapping back, Amy gives a yelp at the pain. Mr. Squeaker's starts to hiss. Amy feels a tightening low in her gut and reaches down to cradle her abdomen. With a gasp, Loki steps back, his face livid. His gaze is on her stomach. In her pocket, Mr. Squeaker's goes silent. Loki's eyes flick in Squeaker's direction and narrow, and then they meet hers. They stare at each other a moment. And then his phone plays a very old song it takes Amy a moment to identify. It's Reptile by the Church. A muscle in Loki's jaw tightens, and then he answers it.
Yes, Skadi? He says, his gaze still hard on Amy.
Amy huffs at Loki's former lover's name, the one who insisted on his prison being bathed in snake venom when he was locked up for 200 years for killing a servant. She blinks, drops her gaze, and a memory comes back to her. No, Loki hadn't killed the servant. He'd only cursed his cooking, and then the man had a heart attack. And the Aesir locked Loki up for that death, claiming it was due to Loki's magic. She looks up at Loki. These are the people he's playing lackey to? Loki switches the phone to his other ear.
Of course, he says in Asgardian. I'll be there right away.
What?
The girl. Yes, she's here. No, of course she doesn't mind being left alone occasionally.
He pauses and then says,
Right, I'll just catch a cab.
Snapping the phone shut, he looks at Amy.
You're going out?
She asks lightly, crossing her arms over her chest. His gaze is hard on hers, and she knows he knows she'll try to run away first chance she gets. Cocking his head, he gives her a tight-lipped smile.
No, I'm being set up.
Turning from Amy, he goes to the front door. Almost to himself, he mumbles,
Scotty never gives me important orders.
His eyes flick to Amy, and he smirks.
I just adore disobeying her.
Brow furrowing, he turns away again.
But Odin didn't want to give me this order, which probably means that the threat of a new gate is a lie. But Scotty doesn't know that, so I detect no lie.
He looks to the door again.
If I obeyed the order, I'd be leaving you alone.
Amy fights the urge to say something eager like, Go ahead and go, have fun. Instead, she just manages a soft... Oh. Dropping his head, Loki closes his eyes, and Amy feels a buzz low within her. He's doing some sort of magic. Loki opens his eyes an instant later and strides towards her.
There are Einherjar in the stairwells on this floor.
Mr. Squeaker stirs in her pocket, but doesn't hiss.
What?
Says Amy.
My guess is they're coming for you, says Loki.
Drawing back, Amy says,
Why?
Catching her hand, Loki cocks his head.
We're going to find out.
What? Says Amy. Free hand sliding around her mouse. Mr. Squeaker's doesn't squirm or hiss, though Loki is very close. Still holding her hand, Loki steps behind her and pulls her roughly into his chest. In her ear, he whispers,
Perhaps you'll appreciate me more when I save your life.
Amy sucks in a breath, but no air rushes into her, just cold. For a few seconds, they're in the darkness of the in-between again. When they emerge into light and air and gravity again, Amy's lungs convulsing, seeking oxygen. They are standing in a huge office with dark paneled walls and a row of small narrow windows that shimmer with blue light. One of the windows is open, and a raven sits on the sill. Directly in front of the windows is an enormous desk. A second raven is perched on a reading light. Behind the desk sits a man with a white beard and long white hair in a perfectly tailored suit. Next to him leans a spear. One of his eyes is covered by an eye patch. Gasping for breath as she recovers from the step through the in-between, Amy feels a shiver run through her. Holding her tight, voice a hiss, Loki whispers, "Hello, Odin." Chapter 8. On the desk, one of the ravens raises its wings, bobs its head, and clacks its beak.
"It's her! It's her!"
it squawks. Standing from his chair, Odin gives a flick of his wrist. Flapping their wings and giving a few angry squawks in Amy's direction, the ravens rise from their perches and exit the window. Eyes never leaving Loki's, Odin says,
"What is the meaning of this?"
Loki huffs a laugh and his breath tickles Amy's ear.
"That's my question to you, All-Father."
He spits out the last words like a curse, and his fingers dig into Amy's wrist. Taking his spear in hand, Odin starts to walk around his desk. Odin's long white hair and beard are neatly groomed, the eye patch a glittering silver. His movements are smooth, his body trim. He may look older than Loki, and he may be wearing an impeccably tailored suit, but it is obvious that he is a man that is not a stranger to physical activity. The All-Father rounds the corner of the desk, and his eye alights on Lavitain at Loki's side. The sword is glowing with the same blue light as the Board of Trade building.
"You did not tell me about this sword," Odin says.
His voice is calm, almost warm, but Amy feels herself pushing herself back into Loki's chest.
"I did," Loki says. "It was in my report. Now tell me what you want with the girl." "You left out how powerful it is," Odin says, cocking an eyebrow and leaning slightly on his spear.
Holding out his free hand, he says,
"Give it to me."
Amy hears a whipping sound. One of Loki's arms is suddenly wrapping tight around her, and Lavitain is inches from her neck. Amy gives a short cry of fear.
"Tell me what you want or I kill her,"
Loki shouts. Odin is silent. Loki's breath is loud in her ear. The only sound Amy hears is her own feet shuffling helplessly on the carpet as she instinctively tries to draw further away from the blade. Loki chuckles.
"So that's it. You want her dead."
Something clicks in Amy's mind. Mr. Squeakers is quiet. Has he run off? Wanting to find him in her pocket, to know she's not alone, and simultaneously hoping he's escaped, Amy carefully slips a trembling hand into her coat. Mr. Squeakers is there. His whiskers are trembling, but he's making no move to attack. Amy feels herself start to tremble. She squeezes her eyes shut. She can't fight Odin and Loki. She has to use her brain. Odin lets out a long sigh, and Amy opens her eyes.
"I am sorry, Loki,"
Odin says, frowning softly. His one blue eye goes to Amy. Odin looks and sounds genuinely sorrowful, but the way he looks her up and down without meeting her eyes makes Amy feel as though he's looking at a piece of livestock.
"She is a pretty thing. It is a waste."
A small huff of dismay, fear, and anger escapes Amy's lips. Odin talks about her as though she's an animal he doesn't want to slaughter, but will anyway. Trembling behind her, Loki sucks in a breath with such force he hisses. Shaking his head, Odin massages his temple and leans against his desk.
"World gates should not be opening, Loki. Something about this girl is upsetting the balance of space-time."
He looks at Loki over Amy's shoulder.
"I am sorry, my friend, but for the sake of the Nine Realms, this girl must die."
Amy swallows and feels her legs go to jelly beneath her.
"No!"
Loki screams with so much force Amy jumps. Straightening, Odin says,
"It must be done, Loki. Give the girl and the sword to me. I will make sure it is quick and painless."
Odin takes a step forward. Mr. Squeakers gives a hiss, but it's muffled by Amy's coat. Sword near Amy's throat, Loki draws her back quickly, and Amy gives another little cry.
"No!"
Loki says, his voice trembling, his arm holding Amy more tightly. Voice thick, he says,
"No, if anyone kills her, it has to be me."
Amy chokes down her urge to make another sound or to struggle. Something is going on here she doesn't understand. Odin's forehead creases in a look of concern, and he takes a step forward. In her pocket, Mr. Squeakers begins to squirm in Amy's hand. Her eyes slide downward. Squeakers is upset by Odin, but not by Loki. Loki is lying to Odin. Her eyes go to the All-Father. He is not looking at her. His eye is fixed on Loki. Her gaze sweeps past him to his desk. It is as neat and clean as his appearance. He oozes authority and competence. She swallows. She'd definitely rather take her chances with Loki.
Loki, Odin says, I will do anything to make this easier for you. But you know how emotional you are. Are you sure you want it to be you? Perhaps you should...
No! Loki screams. It has to be me!
His last words come out a choked sob. Burrowing his face in the crook of Amy's neck, he says, I have to make sure she doesn't suffer. Cowering against him, Amy gives a whimper that isn't completely an act. Odin lets out a long breath.
Very well.
Loki pulls her tighter to him and lets out a shaky breath.
May I use the sword?
Rocking slightly on his heels, he flicks Lavatane closer to Amy's neck and makes another choking sound against the side of her head. Odin sighs.
Of course. But then you must give it to me.
Amy feels Loki nodding against her, his movements jerky and frantic.
Yes, yes, I understand. First I must kill her, then I must give you the sword. Those are your orders.
Yes, says Odin quietly, as though he is speaking to a frightened animal. Those are my orders.
Loki sucks in another breath, and then he starts to chuckle, and then to laugh. Amy feels him raising his head. Her eyes widen as understanding rushes through her. Odin doesn't know she's pregnant. She can hear the evil smirk in Loki's voice when he says,
You just broke your oath not to harm my children, Big Daddy.
Odin's brows constrict. Giving a kiss to the top of Amy's head, Loki crows,
She's carrying my child!
And then with a cry of rage, still clasping Amy awkwardly in his arm, Loki swings Lavatane towards Odin. In the blink of an eye, Odin swings his spear up to block the blow. The sword meets the staff of the spear with the clack of metal hitting wood, but the spear does not break. Loki gives an angry snarl, and Lavatane shimmers with light, but the spear only seems to draw the light towards itself. Nostrils flaring, Odin's eyes flick to Amy. With a grunt, Odin spins forwards, the force pushing Loki and Amy backwards. A heartbeat later, the spear is aimed at Amy's chest. With a curse, Loki raises Lavatane, and then once again, they are in the in-between. When they emerge from the in-between, Loki lets Amy go immediately. She falls to her knees and begins gasping for breath.
Father!
A man shouts. Raising her head, Amy sees one of the most beautiful men she's ever seen rushing into Loki's arms. He's tall and broader than Loki, his features more chiseled. His hair is blonde with just a hint of ginger. His skin is warm and tanned-looking.
Vali!
Loki shouts, pulling him towards him with one arm. Vali laughs.
You've slipped out of your deal with Odin, and Lavatane has let you slip into my magical cell.
For the first time, Amy takes in her surroundings. She's in a small room with a toilet and wash basin in one corner, a bed lying in the other. The whole room shines with Sira's blue light. She looks backwards and sees bars of shimmering blue.
How did you know?
Loki asks. Amy turns her head back to the father and son. Loki is smiling at Vali, his face wide and open with wonder. Dipping his chin, Vali gives a wolfish grin.
Sira, father! Sira speaks to me and has told me everything! We must set her free!
Amy's heart stops. Visions of a half-decimated LaSalle Street in her universe and the other universe with a world bathed in ashes fill her mind.
No!
Amy cries from where she is still crouched on the ground.
No, Loki shall destroy you!
Vali's eyes turn to her. For a moment, annoyance flickers on his face, and then he shakes his head. Letting go of Loki, he steps towards Amy and holds out his hand to her.
Fear not, comrade. In your world, Sira misunderstood the nature of my father's magic. Father was never meant to contain her, but I am.
Amy suddenly remembers Loki's words from earlier this morning. Vali would be the god of armed rebellion.
Once Sira is free, I'll remove the yoke Odin has put upon humanity's neck. I'll set humans free as well,
Vali says, his jaw going hard. Amy remembers being in Loki's apartment and hearing Sira's voice in her head, and hearing Sira's plans for humanity. Kill them. Kill them all. What had Loki said? Vali is the incarnation of armed rebellion. Sira fancies herself the second coming of Joseph Stalin. And they want to be united. Oh, fuck.
Chapter 9.
Ignoring Vali's proffered hand, Amy scrambles to her feet and turns to Loki.
No, Loki, it's a trap. Sira isn't about freedom for anyone. She's worse than Odin.
Loki's eyes flit between Vali and Amy.
Amy is distantly aware of the sound of many footsteps pounding not far off and rapidly getting closer.
Father, says Valley, if we don't destroy Odin and his allies, we will live our lives on the run.
Pointing at Amy's middle, he says,
my sister will spend her life on the run.
Loki's eyes drift to Amy's abdomen and then dart back to Valley.
You know she's pregnant?
Valley smiles. On his chiseled features, the smile is devastatingly bright and handsome. And yet in the way he holds it too long, the way the light catches his teeth, there's something slightly feral about it.
Sira told me,
he says. Loki tilts his head at his son. You're right.
What do we do?
We must go to Sira now,
says Valley, a manic gleam burning in his eyes.
She showed me how to free her.
Backing away unconsciously, Amy's back hits the bars of blue light. Wincing, she jerks forward as pain like an electric shock shoots through her shoulders.
You're coming with us,
Loki says, moving towards her very fast. Mr. Squeakers wiggles in her pocket. From behind her, Amy hears a shout. She turns to see the bars disappear. She almost bolts forward. But then men in the same camouflage uniforms she'd seen outside flood into the floor in front of the cell, all of them with guns raised.
Fire!
Someone shouts, but Loki's hand is already on one wrist, Valley's hand is on the other, and Lavatane is cutting an arc through the air. And then they are in the in-between. For a moment, Amy is staring at the blade's glow. She sees herself in it, just as she is. In the split second, she wishes that she saw another universe, like she had during that first leap. But her reflection doesn't waver. Gravity catches Loki, Valley, and Amy, and they fall. Loki and Valley land on their feet, in what, from the light and wire flooring beneath them, must be a maintenance room or warehouse of some kind. In the distance, Amy hears the sound of a motor. She almost topples over, but Loki and Valley's hands on her wrists keep her steady. They can't steady her stomach, though. Four walks through the in-between in less than an hour undo her. Coughing and sputtering, she empties her stomach onto the floor at her feet, vomit spilling through the wire flooring to whatever lies below them.
What's wrong with her?
Valley shouts as Amy's body quivers and shivers.
It's just morning sickness,
Loki says. Wrapping an arm around Amy, he barks,
get a hold of yourself!
Gritting her teeth, taking deep breaths, Amy tries to will her roiling stomach to be still. She hates Loki in that moment. She wants to swing at him, but her body is shuddering from the force of her nausea. Tears of fury come to her eyes. Head bowed, fighting her body's urge to dry heave, Amy doesn't think she's ever felt so helpless. Not even when Loki used her as a pawn against Odin. She squeezes her eyes shut and feels bitterness as sharp as the bile in her mouth. The two men beside her don't seem upset by where they landed. They must still be in their universe. How come Lavatane only crosses universes when Amy holds the blade? It's not fair that for Loki the sword only works like a battery. Another wave of nausea hits her. Amy coughs and heaves, but nothing comes out. She clutches her stomach and her eyes widen.
Maybe it isn't Lavatane making the jump.
Amy gasps for breath, her hands tightening on her stomach. She bows her head.
Oh.
Beside her, Valley says,
if we use Lavatane to bring down the support beams, the force of the building collapsing on Sira should be enough to crack the Promethean wire.
Taking a deep breath, Amy raises her head and instantly takes a step back. She's on a catwalk. About 15 paces to her left is a landing with huge security doors, heavy industrial storage chests, and a glass box that looks like it is filled with artillery. But what makes Amy gasp in shock is directly in front of her. Just beyond the catwalk's railing is an enormous sphere of twisted, organic-looking metal bars in a vaguely octagonal pattern. It's Promethean wire, but mutated. It looks as though it has been stretched and expanded, like it is bulging from the force of all the magic it is trying to contain, which Amy realizes it probably is. The sphere of Promethean wire is at least 4 stories tall. The catwalk they are on seems to run right by its center. The huge sphere is lit from within by a ball of pulsing blue light, only a few hands wide, floating in midair. Amy takes a shaky breath. It's Sira. Prongs of more organic metal twist out from Sira and reach toward the crossbars of the giant cage. Amy glances down towards the ground the Promethean wire sphere rests upon. Her eyes catch on a conveyor belt just about a story below. On it are what look like cement boxes marked with spray-painted signs for nuclear waste. Before her eyes, one of the cement boxes connects with the metal of the Promethean wire. Sira pulses, and the cement canister vanishes into the in-between without a sound. Amy's brow furrows. At least part of what Loki's told her is true.
If we knock down those beams, the building will collapse on top of us, Loki says.
Amy's attention snaps to Loki and Valley. They are studying large beams of vertical steel rising around the Promethean wire holding Sira. Even Amy can tell the beams are too utilitarian to be anything other than load-bearing.
But, says Valley, Sira says it. Sira wills it.
Sira's not an architect, Amy blurts out, and she doesn't care if any of us die.
Shut up, Valley screams.
Children, says Loki in a bemused voice.
She thinks she knows, but she doesn't, Valley screams, pointing at Amy. We know.
We? Fuck and double fuck.
You're already under Sira's control, Amy spits.
Both of you be quiet, Loki says,
voice tense, bemusement gone. Amy is vaguely aware of a tingling feeling low in her abdomen. Holding up a hand, eyes half closed, Loki shouts,
Valley, there are men coming towards us. There are weapons on the landing set into the wall. Cover me. I'm going to try and break the Promethean sphere with Lavatane.
Yes, father,
Valley says, and runs down the catwalk. As Valley tears away, Loki walks over to the railing separating the walkway from Sira. Swinging Lavatane above his head, he brings it down on the Promethean wire. The wire surges with light, and Loki disappears, leaving the wire undamaged. Sira sucked him into the in-between, just as she did to anyone that touched her in Amy's universe. From the landing, Valley curses, a weapon Amy thinks is an M16 in his arms. Pounding erupts from the double doors beside him, and with another curse, he turns and begins propping the metal storage containers against the doors. Amy stares at the space Loki had been. In the universe of where Chicago had been turned to ash, when the damaged Loki had pushed her away in the in-between, the last thing she wished for was to go to a universe where Loki didn't have to die. Her mind spins. And before that, during the first jump to another universe, she'd wished to be with Loki again. At that moment, Loki reappears, heaving for breath. Bending over, resting one hand on his knees, he gives her a wry smile and gasps,
Well, that didn't work.
Amy stares at him. She thinks she knows how to go home. But first, she needs Lavatane. She bites her lips. She has no weapons, and even if she did, Loki and Valley have centuries of experience in combat. Her hands go to her pocket. Mr. Squeakers is still there. Amy's eyes slide down to her little passenger. What had Loki said? Mr. Squeaker's venom is strong enough to knock him unconscious. And hadn't Bodhi been terrified of her little mouse? Beneath her hand, Mr. Squeaker's tiny body trembles, and something else occurs to her. The Spider-Mouse hadn't attacked Loki when he'd saved Amy from Odin or the guards of Valley's cell. How aware is her supposedly dangerous little mouse? Recovering, Loki steps towards her and grabs her wrist in one fluid movement. Mr. Squeakers doesn't protest, but his trembling intensifies beneath Amy's fingers. Turning down the catwalk, Loki shouts,
Valley, get over here! We have to leave!
Spinning towards his father, gun upraised, Valley screams,
I'm not going anywhere without Sira!
Beside Amy, Loki swears, but doesn't contradict his son. One of the doors cracks open with a groan, and Valley spins towards the opening and fires a few shots. There are screams from the hallway beyond, and then more gunfire, muffled this time, from the other side of the cracked door. Cursing, Valley crouches behind the wall of storage containers he's built, and aims his gun toward the open door. Loki holds up a hand, and from the hallway beyond Valley, Amy hears a scream and sees the light of orange flames. Loki intends to stay and help Valley. And what if he wanted to leave? Where would that leave Amy? She can't stay with this Loki, and this Odin wants her dead. She has to go home, and to do that she has to get Lavatane. She looks down to where the sword hangs loosely in Loki's hand. Maybe all she needs to do is touch it. Taking a deep breath, Amy pulls her free hand away from Mr. Squeaker's and puts it on the handle just above Loki's grip. With a snarl, Loki rips it away.
What are you doing?
Twisting her arm in Loki's grasp, Amy says, Going home. I know how. Gunfire explodes where Valley is. Narrowing his eyes, holding the sword high beyond her, Loki says, You figured it out. He shakes his head and sneers. But you won't do it. Without Miskun, your baby will die. Amy stills, and her heart falls as all her breath rushes from her chest. Loki is right. Without a magic user like Miskun, what chance does her magical baby have to survive? Gunfire rings in her ears. She looks towards the landing. Loki's son lets out a cry like a banshee. Amy closes her eyes. Her body suddenly feels like lead. All fight leaves her.
You're seeing sense, says Loki, pulling her tightly to him.
Now be good, and maybe we can work something out for you after the baby comes.
Amy gasps at him as a tear rolls down her cheek. A promise and a threat? She's standing over a precipice, her child's life or her own. It's an impossible, horrible choice. That he'd force her to make it makes her feel sick. There is more gunfire, and Valley gives a whoop of triumph and a mad laugh by the still mostly closed door. If Valley gets Sira, if this Loki gets Sira, she looks at Sira and remembers the world of ash and rubble that Sira destroyed. No, not world. Steve had said Loki had destroyed all of the 9 realms with Sira. Amy remembers that other Loki grabbing her and whispering, I would take care of you both, but this is the best I can do. Tears sting Amy's eyes. That Loki had trusted and believed in her, and that Loki had wanted the same thing for Amy's baby that Amy wants. A better life. Even if she manages to have her baby here, what sort of life will Amy be giving her? She takes a deep breath. There are magic users on Earth. A few. The Russians are in contact with elves, and then there is the frost giant Gerth, now at Guantanamo. Swallowing, she closes her eyes. She's rationalizing what she is about to do. But there is only death in this universe for Amy, and the world this Loki would give their child would not be a life. There is an explosion from the landing.
Valley, get over here! Loki shouts.
Eyes blurry, careful to keep her movements slow and non-threatening, Amy reaches into her pocket and wraps her hand around Mr. Squeaker's, the only weapon she has. She hopes he is as dangerous as Loki made him out to be.
I'm sorry, Loki, Amy says.
It isn't a lie. She had wanted so badly for the affection this Loki showed her to be real. Loki turns to her, his face livid, because he is angry at Valley or her, she isn't sure. Gunfire explodes on the landing. There is more pounding at the door. Amy glances to see it inching open. Valley fires, but there is no screaming from the other side.
Father! Valley shouts. They have a battering ram!
Loki is gazing at Valley when Amy reaches up to give him one last hug. Grabbing her wrists, voice terse, Loki says,
You can show me you're sorry later!
Bowing her head, Amy opens her fingers as Loki pushes her arms off him. She feels her little mouse wriggle out of her hand.
Mr. Squeakers, she whispers.
What?
Says Loki. Through clenched teeth, Amy whispers,
We have to go home, Squeakers.
She is about to say, bite him, but the words never leave her lips. Loki gives a cry and stumbles backwards. His hand smacks the back of his neck, and Amy's heart drops, but a moment later Mr. Squeakers is jumping through the air and landing on Amy's shoulder. Loki's eyes are wide and his mouth is hanging open. He wavers a moment and then falls to the ground, Lavatane clattering from his grip. Amy picks up the sword and looks down the landing. Both of the security doors are slightly ajar, and Valley is crouched behind the wall of storage containers he's built, firing down the aisle beyond the doors. She stares down at Lavatane. It glows blue, but her reflection and the reflection of Sira behind her remain the same. At her feet, Loki whispers,
You bitch! How can you be so heartless? How can you be so selfish?
Loki's eyes slip shut, and Amy feels like she might throw up again. Maybe she is being selfish. Loki won't hurt her while she's pregnant, and if she just waits a little while longer, maybe she'll find another way to escape. From down the landing, Valley screams in her direction.
What are you doing?
Amy glances up to see Valley's face contort with rage. She pushes all her despair aside and grits her teeth. Heart pounding in her ears, face flushing, Amy looks down at the blade and wills the universe to shift. Nothing happens. From the landing, Valley starts racing towards her. Amy gasps and remembers the other Loki pushing her away when they'd been in the in-between. Slipping Mr. Squeakers into her pocket, she climbs to the top of the railing separating the catwalk from Sira. Awkwardly swinging one leg over, trying not to skewer herself with Lavatane, she raises her eyes and sees Valley lifting his gun in her direction. At that moment, the security doors burst open and Odin steps into the room, armed guards behind him. Valley turns to him, ready to fire. Tapping Gungnir on the ground, Odin shouts,
Stop!
No bullets come, and Valley freezes in place. So do the guards behind Odin. Amy finds herself so afraid she can't even blink. She's filled with a memory of her Loki, fighting Odin's ability to stop time, trying to get to Nari and Valley before they were sucked into the void. Odin begins walking towards her. Amy's body feels heavy with fear. Or is it Odin's magic? Even her thoughts feel like they're swimming through jello. It isn't until her finger twitches on Lavatane's handle that she realizes she can move. She must be just beyond the reach of Odin's spell.
Her eyes slide to the All-Father. He has his spear in hand and is striding alone towards her down the catwalk, past the immobilized form of Valley. Amy's body feels weak, her legs like wet noodles. She doesn't think she has the power to jump. But she'll die if she stays here, or worse, be a pawn to Odin or Loki. Her child might be a pawn. Summoning all her will, she straightens her body.
"You!"
says Odin, his one eye going wide. Sitting on the railing, Amy leans towards Sira. She may be plunging to her and her child's death. It's the best she can do. She lets out a breath of relief and almost smiles when she feels herself toppling over into the Promethean wire, vaguely aware of Odin striding towards her, swinging his arm out to catch her, and missing her by just inches. When she feels the cold darkness of the in-between, she clutches her stomach and silently gives will to her child's unconscious magic, the magic fueled by Lavatane, the magic that allows her to slip through universes.
Let's go home.
Chapter 10. Amy's eyes are wide open when she tumbles out of the in-between into a dark room. She lands upon a wooden floor that cracks under her weight and gives way. Amy falls a few more feet and jolts to a stop. Catching her breath, Amy's eyes slide to the side. She's crouched between the leaves of a shattered table, in a room that looks familiar. Behind her, she hears a shout. Spinning, Amy finds herself staring at a wide-eyed Bodhi. He's clutching an open laptop in his hands and peering over the screen. She's in the conference room where she first saw Lavatane. She doesn't feel relief or happiness. She just feels incredibly tired. Closing her eyes, she touches her bump. She is still nauseous. Above her, Bodhi whispers, "Orie Ekbe." Cold fear washes through Amy at the strange, unfamiliar language. Maybe this isn't her Aduo conference room? Bowing her head and biting her lip, she makes a plea to the universe at large.
"Please tell me you speak English."
"Oh, yes, I speak English," says Bodhi quickly. Lifting her head, Amy finds Bodhi staring at her. He shrugs, and his head does that little tilty thing.
"That was just Pig Latin, for a project I'm working on."
Amy blinks at him. In another universe, Bodhi had outwitted Loki, not just once, twice. In this universe, Bodhi had his memory wiped by Loki. She's beginning to suspect Loki might have jiggled Bodhi's marbles a bit, too. Snapping the laptop shut, he says,
"You're back!"
Before answering, Amy looks carefully around the room. Her body freezes and her heart stops.
"Maybe," she whispers, trying to stay calm. "This doesn't look exactly like the room I left."
The walls to her left and right lack Promethean wire, though it covers the walls behind and in front of her, and the ceiling and floor as well. Putting the laptop down on the chair, Bodhi jumps forward and holds out a hand.
"Oh, the guys in the physics department theorize that Promethean wire works pretty good at containing magic up to a point, but for magical objects that are too strong, it acts like a circuit and opens up passageways to the in-between, especially if containment isn't complete."
Amy can only stare blankly at him. Licking his lip nervously, Bodhi adds,
"Unless you're at a point in the world tree that is a branch, then they thought it might just lead to another realm, which I guess it did because you're back and not a spacicle. Also, they thought if we made it a loop instead of a sphere, it might be more likely to open up on this end if we could get another object, and then we'd follow you. Not that we have an object. But Steve's trying to get Gerd, the frost giantess at Guantanamo, relocated back here."
He tilts his head.
"Your clothes are different, but not very different. Where did you go?"
Amy's left so breathless by that breathless explanation that she can't even answer. But her mind catches on his words. Gerd might be coming back. She stays crouched on the floor a few moments longer before she realizes Bodhi's still holding out his hand. Amy takes it.
"It's a long story," she says at last as Bodhi pulls her to her feet.
As soon as she's standing, he drops her hand, backs up, and slips his hands into his pockets, looking a little uncomfortable.
"Thank you,"
Amy says. He nods. Amy feels like she should say more after he tried to save her life in the library. She puts a hand to her temple. The Loki in that universe wasn't her Loki, and this Bodhi isn't that Bodhi. Instead, she says,
"I need to see my grandmother."
Bodhi nods.
"She's here."
He waves a hand.
"I mean, she was. She took Fenrir out."
At that moment, Amy hears yapping from the hallway. Turning from Bodhi, she goes to the conference room door and throws it open. From down the hallway comes the sound of four tiny paws racing towards her at great speed. She looks down the aisle and a little gray blur bolts around the corner. A moment later, Fenrir is at her feet, the dog's whole body wiggling and bouncing in glee. Amy catches her when Fenrir makes a particularly mighty bounce, and a long pink tongue slinks toward her nose.
Grateful for Fenrir's weight and warmth, Amy squeezes the little animal tight, trying not to gag. Fenrir's mouth has apparently been recently acquainted with something dead. Her normally tolerable breath is as attractive as her ragged ears or her long rat-like muzzle. Still, Fenrir is the most beautiful thing Amy's seen since falling through the in-between. She rubs her hand through the animal's mottled chihuahua meets poodle coat and presses her cheek to her back.
"Amy!"
she hears her grandmother say. She looks up to see Beatrice down the hall, walking briskly beside Steve. Fenrir's tongue sneaks out to kiss her chin. Amy briefly glances down and is seized by another one of Loki's memories. Loki's hand was blue against the white skin of Amy's hip. She was looking up at him with sleepy eyes, smiling softly, completely unfazed by his blue appearance. He thinks he looks diseased, but she said he looks beautiful, and he detected no lie, and there'd been no lie when their bodies had joined. He watches her as her eyes drift closed, then holds his blue hand up to his eyes. How could she not be disgusted by this? He stifled a bitter laugh, remembering her little rat dog. Of course, she loves unlovable things and can't turn away from pitiful creatures.
Amy!
Beatrice's second cry snaps Amy back from the memory. Beatrice and Steve are just steps away. Beatrice puts a hand on Steve's arm for a moment and then runs toward Amy. Wiggling with renewed vigor, Fenrir spills out of Amy's arms, and Amy wraps her arms around her grandmother, trying not to cry.
"You're back! You're back! I thought I'd lost you again!"
Beatrice cries. At their feet, Fenrir does a little dance of happiness, wiggling between Beatrice, Amy, and Bodhi, but giving Steve a wide berth. As Amy buries her head in the space between her grandmother's neck and shoulder, she feels relief, sadness, and disorientation at the shift from memory to reality. From beyond Beatrice, Steve clears his throat.
"Amy, I need to debrief you."
Amy closes her eyes. "Mr. Stickler for paperwork." She bites her lip. And possibly enemy to Odin. She does need to talk to him. But,
"Steve," Amy says, "I need to talk to my grandmother first."
Steve exhales slowly.
"All right,"
he says. Turning to Bodhi, he says,
"Have you seen my laptop?"
I think it is in the conference room," says Bodhi.
Amy is barely listening. Without any words, Amy and Beatrice begin to walk down the hallway together, arms looped, Fenrir trotting beside them.
"Grandma,"
Amy says,
"there's something I need to tell you."
Something she's suddenly sure she doesn't want the government to know. Beatrice's eyes dart down to where Amy has instinctively cradled her barely there bump, and then up to a corner in the wall where a camera stares down at them. She says nothing, just meets Amy's eyes and nods. The warning and the sharpness of her gaze reminds Amy that whomever healed Beatrice did more than just erase the effects of her stroke. Whoever did it healed the ravages of age in Beatrice's mind. The daze and confusion of mild senility have been swept aside like so many cobwebs. They leave the office, Fenrir still at their heels. It is late afternoon in this reality, cold and overcast. The streets and sidewalks are clear, but ice is beginning to creep over the puddles. Sliding her arm from Amy's, Beatrice takes her hand.
"Is there something you wanted to tell me?"
Amy takes a deep breath and begins to tell her everything. By the time she's done, they've made their way to a bench in the courtyard of the Board of Trade building. Fenrir is curled in Amy's lap, along with Mr. Squeakers. Light snowflakes are beginning to fall. Beatrice is patting Amy's hand. Amy sighs.
"I had to leave, Grandma, even though..."
She clutches her middle. Amy swallows.
"Of course you did,"
says Beatrice.
"And it may turn out all right. Steve will get Geraint back. The man is very good at handling these things."
Amy turns towards her grandmother. It strikes her that Beatrice has never once questioned Steve's abilities based on his race. Was Beatrice's unconscious racism before her stroke just another cobweb of an elderly mind swept clean? Amy swallows. Beatrice is right. Steve will get Geraint back. But in time? Beatrice shakes her head.
"I'm just glad to have you home."
Dropping her hand, Beatrice puts her arm around Amy's back and squeezes her tight. Darkness is falling and snowflakes are beginning to tumble from the sky in earnest. The snow is covering up the garbage littering the gutters. In the high rises around Amy and Beatrice, lights start to flicker on in the windows. Another memory sparks in Amy's mind. "Our Loki thought that at night Chicago looks more like a city built by gods than any city in the Nine Realms. He loved us, Grandma." Her Loki did love humans, if not her individually. "I don't understand how the other Loki could be so..." "Condescending. Dismissive. Cruel." Beatrice sighs.
Voice sad and far away, Beatrice says, "Warrior cultures tend to look down on their conquests. It's easier to kill those you see as lesser beings." Amy straightens. Of course, Beatrice would know. She survived the Soviet takeover of the Ukraine. Beatrice lost her family, her life. It's humbling to realize, in comparison, even if the worst happens, Amy has lost very little. She picks at the sleeve of her ridiculously luxurious coat. It had felt nice to be adored by that other Loki, but her Loki had given more. He'd saved her world, even if the saving had been painful. She takes a breath. She's seen the extremes of Loki now, let loose to destroy, and tied by oath to be a tool to sustain cruel order. A tool just bristling to break free, bitter and angry, ready to wreak havoc. Maybe her Loki hadn't loved Amy, but he was right. When he came back, she would never turn him or her or it away. Maybe it wasn't a conscious thought to make her the bearer of his memories, but in a way that was even more of an honor. He trusted Amy, instinctively. Beside her, Beatrice stands and holds out her hand for Amy to take. But it's Mr. Squeakers who hops up first and scampers up Beatrice's arm. Without letting her eyes leave Amy, Beatrice slips Mr. Squeakers into her pocket with her other hand.
"We should go inside. It looks like Steve has sent out the cavalry."
Bodhi suddenly appears beside her grandmother, and Amy knows what her grandmother meant. Shivering, hands tucked in his pockets, Bodhi says,
"Steve sent me out to make sure you're okay."
Amy nods at him and then turns to her grandmother, still holding out a hand. Amy's eyes go to Beatrice's pocket, where Mr. Squeaker's nose is peeking out, whiskers twitching. Fenrir squirms on her lap. She's only distantly aware of Bodhi, hopping up and down now, teeth chattering audibly. Her eyes return to Beatrice, silhouetted by the city lights. Everything Amy loves is with her here in this moment. In another universe, Amy hadn't met Loki, and Beatrice had a stroke anyway. In this universe, Beatrice had a stroke, but she was healed by whomever healed Amy's wounds after she was shot by the SWAT team. Amy knows Loki couldn't have done it. Healing anyone other than himself wasn't one of his powers. But she does know. Somehow, that small personal miracle was connected to her knowing Loki. Her Loki. The Loki that transformed Sira and saved the Nine Realms. Amy remembers Loki's words in those last minutes before he sacrificed himself. "Don't let me forget." Of course, Amy won't turn away from the next incarnation of chaos. She won't let her, him, or it forget they have a choice. To be a destroyer, a mindless tool, or a transformer. Pulling Fenrir close, she takes Beatrice's hand and stands, her stomach lurching at the movement just a little.
"Are you okay?" says Bodhi, taking a step closer. "She's fine," says Beatrice briskly.
Protectively, Amy realizes. Amy gives Bodhi a small smile. He's lost his memory, his whole world.
"I will be," Amy says softly.
Teeth chattering, he nods and looks away. Amy slips her free arm into Beatrice's, and together they walk in silence with Bodhi, streetlights glowing warm overhead. With every step she takes, Amy becomes more certain. She won't turn the next incarnation of chaos aside just because she is compassionate. Amy won't turn the next Loki away because the fate of the Nine Realms and everything Amy loves hangs in the balance. This concludes In the Balance by C. Gockel, narrated by Barry Krynick. Copyright 2015 by C. Gockel. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Carolyn Gockel and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take it